This week's episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the good folks supporting us over on patreon.com/StarWarsReport.
Let's do the show, folks.
Come, come, come.
And who might you be?
It's the Star Wars Report.
Star Wars Report.
Woo! Star Wars Report. The place for Star Wars news, features, interviews, and more.
Then we can do something epic.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate.
The Force. It's calling to you. Just let it in.
But you know what I do? Look at there. You see what I do have?
Oh, nice.
You know what that is? Mm-mm. That's my Galaxy's Edge pass holder shirt.
Nice.
I got a Jedi Order with says manufactured on Ossus. I was pretty stoked about that.
That's cool.
I,
yeah.
Wow, we're all wearing Star Wars shirts. I'm wearing Jedi News.
Oh yeah.
Whoa.
Matt, what we got?
Matt's got the Hildebrandt poster.
Yeah, isn't that Hildebrandt? Such a great poster. Yeah.
That's so awesome. We're all dressed for Star Wars, and this is the Star Wars Report, everybody. Thank you for joining us, and I'm Bruce Gibson. And along with me, as you just heard, of course, is Mark Herleman, as always.
Hey.
And we also have Scott Rifen back in the house from last week.
I never left.
I know.
I've been hanging out at Bruce's place for the last week.
It's about time you pick up your clothes off the floor.
Sorry about that. You don't mind if I keep sleeping on the couch, though, do you?
Maybe just one more night, but I gotta kick you out. And of course we have Matthew Rushing in the house. How you doing?
What's up, guys?
Hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, I'm putting together a crew.
And we are that crew. So we got several things we're gonna go over on today's show. We have some news items that we're going to touch on a little later. We also have an interview that Mark did with author Daniel Jose Older, who did the novel Last Shot, the Han and Lando novel that came out about a month ago. And we're going to talk about connections of Solo, a Star Wars story, to the entire Star Wars universe, whether it's canon or legends. We're just going to pick apart all the little connections that that movie has to all the elements of Star Wars.
The mythos.
The whole mythos. But, you know, before we get to that, I just want to ask Matt, because Mark and Scott were on last week's show, and so we know what they thought about Solo, and of course I talked about that too. So, Matt, if you could just give us an idea, what'd you think of Solo, a Star Wars story?
Well, I mean, hopefully everybody's listened to the 602 Club episode where John Mills and Christy Morris and I broke it down, but if you haven't, I loved it. I would say it is the most fun I have had in a Star Wars movie, the most enjoyable Star Wars movie experience that I've had since 2005. Mm-hmm. Like this movie, the best way I can, there's a couple ways I can describe it. One, it made me feel like I was back in the 80s as a kid watching the, you know, Spielberg Lucas era classics, you know, whether it was the original trilogy or Indiana Jones. That's exactly what this movie made me feel like. Secondly, I'd say I really truly feel like this is the Star Wars movie that we, you know, no fan, it's everything we never knew we always wanted. Like, it's, I just don't think that most people thought in their head, you know, I really, really want a Solo story. I don't think anybody was, like, really super gung-ho. I don't think I ever met anybody that was just, like, gangbusters on fire for it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after seeing it, I mean, this is what I want. I want more stories like this. I want more Star Wars films like this. This is how I want my Star Wars films to be, personally.
Well, that's great. So it made you feel like a kid again. I mean, that's what it sounds
like.
Yeah. I mean, you could do that going to Chuck E. Cheese's, too. But this is a little different.
I mean, yeah, it was like winning skee ball at Chuck E. Cheese, you know, back in the day, and then going to watch the weird mechanical, you know, show. No, it absolutely. John Mills and I have been saying this, that it repaired our Star Wars hearts.
Ooh,
that means they were broken.
Oh, they were broken big time by the Last Jedi. And this, I would say this and especially the end of Rebels have really just put it back together. I mean, I am so on fire for my love for Star Wars again with this film. And this is the other thing, too.
Well, and let me just mention real quick before you say this, there are going to be spoilers as we get further yes. into this. So anybody who's listening that hasn't seen Solo and doesn't want to be spoiled, go away. Come back later.
I'm bowing out. I'll see you guys later.
Now go away. So
we don't serve your kind yet.
Scott's clothes with you.
Going all the way back, seeing The Force Awakens, I ended up seeing that 6 times in the theater, and part of that process was me trying to find some resolution with the movie, like what I thought of it, and two, it's one of those things where everybody wants to see it, right? When you they're like, oh, have you seen, so they want to go see it. I loved Rogue One, and I saw that about 4 times in the theater. Really enjoyed that. The Last Jedi I saw twice. Mm-hmm. This movie I've seen 4 times. I have the ticket in my pocket for tomorrow, so it'll be a 5th, and I'm sure there'll be a 6th. Nice. Just because this movie has me enjoying it every time I see it. Like, I'm not bored when I'm watching it. I'm not like, oh, I've already, there's just something about it that keeps me coming back. And that's special. Like, mm-hmm. And it's not just Star Wars movies. It's like any movie to make me feel like that.
Well, I know after I saw it, I saw it with Michael Morris, and we both asked each other if, we thought that you would like it. And I think one of the things that we both thought that you would like is there's some tie-ins to Rebels and Clone Wars and other Star Wars things. And that's one of the main topics we want to talk about today. So, and you mentioned Rebels just a moment ago. So what are some of those connections that you're seeing to Rebels and Clone Wars and other things in Star Wars, especially Rebels right now? Because I look at Enfied's Nest and that whole band kind of being a somewhat connection into Rebels, because they're like part of the, almost like starting a rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, Rebels did a great job of, especially at the very beginning, showing how the Rebellion was made up of small little sects around the galaxy that were loosely connected. In fact, we really didn't get the fact that they were super connected till the end of the first season, that there was any kind of connection, with this Fulcrum character. Mm-hmm. And so I think getting that revelation, which I was not expecting this to have anything to do with anything rebellion related, but just having that small little connection of saying, we're fighting the Empire, but at the same time, they're also fighting what the Empire is allowing to continue, which is these crime syndicates, which we saw very heavily in the last few seasons of the Clone Wars. Obviously, with Maul and with, seeing Black Sun finally, the Pike Syndicate, Death Watch, the Savage and Maul, all of that stuff. I think what was so great about Solo is that it clearly understands the time frame that it's in and what happened in the Star Wars universe. And how to use those connections correctly to tell the story. Like, it understands its own context. It understands the past history. It understands the future history. And so it can tell a story that feels cohesive and fully realized in where it is. And so these connections, I think, they enhance the story, especially for fans like us. But I also think, they probably are making other fans be like, oh man, I got to do some research, and that's good.
Yeah. Go check out. Yeah. Now I want to go check out Rebels. I want to go check out Clone Wars from what we, see in Solo. It makes people want to go and check those out. And Scott, I think you're not even caught up on Rebels, right?
I'm not caught up on Clone Wars. What are you talking about, Rebels? I'm still in season 2 of Clone Wars. And from what I understand, it really takes off in season 3. So yeah, I've got all that mm-hmm. stuff, but and when Rebels came on, I started to watch it, and then here's the thing. I work a lot. And I don't have a lot of time to watch TV. So I grab what I can when I can, but unfortunately, I'm hideously far behind on my TV viewing. So yeah, I'm way, way, way back there.
Well, I know you want to watch them.
I've got them. I keep buying them. And I'm like, one day I'll get to the, it's like when I look over here and I see hundreds of Star Wars novels and I realize I probably have read maybe a third of these.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's why I always think when I retire, that's when I'm going to catch up on everything.
This is going to sound like the worst thing ever, so please don't hold this against Star Wars Report, but I've often said to my parents, I wish I could find some kind of a painless but yet debilitating disease that I could have so I could just not, like, be confined to the home and just, you know, be bedridden and just read all day. So that was, I used to, the former police chief was a good buddy of mine here, and I used to sit down with him and say, okay, now what can I do that would be like a crime that wouldn't actually hurt anybody, but would get me sentenced to house arrest. So that, you know, so I could just, you know, and like if the wife goes, hey, I need you to go get a thing of milk. I can't. I'm sorry, honey. I'm on house arrest. So I'm just going to sit in here and read some more. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to, you know, catch up on some stuff.
This is really sick because I have thoughts, not quite like that, but similar. But anytime I watch something on a movie or TV show where somebody goes to jail, I think, man, if I were in jail, I would catch up on a lot of reading.
No, it blows me away because I always hear all these stories about all these celebrities. He's on house arrest. He violated his house arrest. It's like, why in the world would you violate house arrest? Of all
just
things.
Extend it out a little longer.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Well, you know, if I violate it, maybe they'll give me an extra 2 months or something. I don't know. But, I mean, and you know, I'm not even asking for years. I just like 30 days of house arrest, and I will be a better man for it.
So, I mean, he will have finished the Clone Wars and Rebels in that
time. I'll finish
period.
All of them. I'll that's do all right. that and read half the EU.
Well, what's funny is I came out of watching Solo, and I was a little confused at first because they played the time placement on this so tight that I didn't realize that this took place before Rebels. I'm like, wait a minute. Maul's alive. What's going on? So I had to pull it up. You know, I'm like, okay, this is falling in at the time of A New Dawn, basically. And there's nothing else after that for another 4 or 5 years. Then we have Servants of the Empire, Edge of the Galaxy. Then at 5 years before, we have Ezra's Gamble in season one. So we're 5 years before Rebels even starts at this point. So when we're seeing that Two Tubes character, you know, Enfys Nest, that could be wiped out by Rebels time. And what we're seeing with Saw's group is the remnants of that group. I mean, there could be a really cool story there that maybe they don't become a major part. Maybe they become what's left of everything that we see in Rogue One. And that's, you know, the bare death of that rebel cell. And so it's even more integral that Jyn's hope rekindles the flame of rebellion, because we've had five, almost 6 years. Well, at that point, it's 10 years of it slowly getting to a point where they're lighting the match and exploding the keg. You know, the powder keg goes and we watch the Death Star blow up and the galaxy changes from that moment on. But we've got 9 years leading up to that, and Enfy might be a power player, or we might see them peter out. Either way, I think a lot of people want to see that story told, whether it be in comic or in book. I don't know if we're going to see more movies, but there has been a lot of people feeling like we might get a trilogy out of these movies down the road.
I think if it had opened the way they'd wanted it to open, it would be that. And again, the shame of the whole thing is that the movie's not making the money that it really should, because I kind of feel a little bit like Matt, where, you know, I was dejected with Last Jedi as well. I'll be honest with you. You know, the Last Jedi is the movie that the Star Wars movie I've seen the least at the theater, if you don't count the Clone Wars movie, which I saw exactly once at the theater. I saw Last Jedi twice, and that was, you know, it was all I wanted to see. And I went and saw Solo. I planned to see it again. I kept trying to see it again last week. I've seen it twice, and I kept trying to see it again last weekend, but I couldn't get my family to either go with me or let me go, and that gets a little thorny. So I'm going to try to go back tomorrow, but I want to go back and I want to soak in the details, and I want to, because this was fun, and there was a point in time where Star Wars was fun, and somewhere it got to where the drama overtook the fun. And again, to me, Star Wars is always fun. It's funny, a while back Riley asked a question of, you know, what is Star Wars, you know, to you, you know, what is it that you love about Star Wars? And he had this big, it's a mythological, you know how Riley is. It's a big mythological thing, and the underpinnings of this, that, and the other. And all I can think of is I fell in love with Star Wars when I was six. I didn't know anything about mythology. Here's what I knew. It looked amazing. It sounded amazing. And I laughed so much that 2 hours that, you know, that's what I want Star Wars to be, is that it, I want it to do that to me that it did when I was six. And it did through the prequels for me. The prequels work for me very much so. And
sounds
and
like you need to go to Force Chuck Awakens E. Cheese's did. Too.
Yeah, no, Chuck Solo was a. I had no idea where Matt was going with that.
Solo is Chuck E. Cheese for us.
Chuck E. Cheese for us, sure. And I never went to Chuck E. Cheese as a kid. I have to take his word for it. I couldn't go to Chuck E. Cheese. We didn't have that. We're in the back.
So one of the things I've been thinking of, Empress Nest character and what her connections might be, I was kind of wondering if maybe she was from a planet like Onderon. You know, she kind of had a look like she could be from that planet, you know, when I was thinking back of the Clone Wars series. And it would make sense then why one of the Two Tubes characters would be there. Because obviously, I mean, the last, I definitely think they're wanting to make that partisan connection. Mm-hmm. And we know Saul is active then. He's been fighting since the Clone Wars. He just continued to fight with the Empire. And so I think what's so crazy about this is there is such a fertile ground to tell a trilogy here based in the part of the galaxy we had never really explored before, except for in Clone Wars when we did those you know, bounty hunter arcs and stuff like that. This really shows just how big the Star Wars galaxy is. And the fact that we didn't talk about the Force once in here, but it didn't bother me at all, was pretty fantastic. And it just shows you, if you do it right, that the Star Wars galaxy, you can tell any kind of story you want to. Yep. The Clone Wars actually proved that. People didn't know that because people didn't watch it. But this shows you, you can take just about any genre you want, and if you do it just right, it'll feel Star Wars, but it'll also feel new. So this is, and I do not understand. I am rip roaring mad at the critics for not giving this what it's due. This is a 4.5, 5-star movie. This is just great fun. And again,
yeah, but I think maybe some of these critics miss the Force. I think there's a certain expectation going to Star Wars.
They miss something.
Their expectation should be fun.
But the most, yeah. I think the majority of critics like this movie, though. Yeah. So,
but it did. I mean, it scored. It is in the positive, but it did score about 20 points lower than Last Jedi.
Right.
Yeah, but
which,
Bruce is
come
onto
on.
Something
like,
though. When
what,
you think about, if you're going to introduce somebody to like say Legends, right, and you're like, well, what do you like? Do you like Mandalorians? Do you like Sith? Do you like Jedi? Yeah. Do you like Imperial? There are definite flavors in the mm-hmm. Legends universe where you could point someone, and you could definitely know you're going to lock them into something they really like. And if you're somebody that's really big into the Jedi stuff, it does seem like we're in an era where we're stepping away from that as we move forward. It's like, well, Lucas told all the Jedi stuff in the prequels, and we're slowly moving away from that. And I know that a lot of the people that I know that are members of the 501st that didn't care for this, that's one of their complaints, was that it was missing that mysticism that they liked so much.
Interesting, the 501st would have a concern about that.
Right?
What is interesting to me, though, I mean, think about this. The Last Jedi is 91 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Solo is 71.
Yeah.
Totally flip that, and maybe it makes more sense. because this movie is at least 91 to 95. This is where it should be on Rotten Tomatoes. That's how good this movie is. And part of that, Bruce, is these connections. Because it uses the Star Wars universe in a way that validates itself
more than like, in the past three. I think more so. I think this taps into the other threes. I mean, tap into the movies, where I think this taps more into things we've seen in books, things we've seen in the different TV series. And I mean, it's really, I think this is a fan's dream.
I'd say that it's the it's honestly the Star Wars story movies that are doing it right.
Yeah.
I think part of the issue with Last Jedi's high critic score is you have to remember who the critics are, and you have to remember that they think Star Wars is kiddie and fluffy and light and meaningless and not substantive. And when Last Jedi, you know, went to bat and tried to do something that was quote unquote different or deeper, perhaps, I think they responded to that, you know, it's not normal Star Wars. And so that to them is a great thing because, you know, it's different and it's so it's deeper. It's not the kiddie fluff stuff. But in all honesty, at some point, it's got to be Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Solo is Flash Gordon. I think it's very much a Flash Gordon type of adventure.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that I feel like they really tapped into was that Indiana Jones type vibe for a movie about Solo. That's mm-hmm. kind of what it feels like. And they did a great job with that. Now, what I think is interesting too is that, you know, you set up with the character of Maul, with bringing in Maul, you could have a fantastic second story. Mm-hmm. That John and I were just talked about this the other night. John Mills, my podcast partner from Aggressive Negotiations, the idea you could set up the second movie and the third movie that ends up winding up having Boba Fett and Obi-Wan all wrapped up into this. And just think how cool it would be to have Obi-Wan be the one who is instrumental in helping maybe strand Maul on Malachor in the first place. Ooh, I mean, how cool would that be? So then you would understand even more why he's like trying to get back at him at the end in Rebels. Like, again, it just, you could do that. It could be awesome.
Yeah, I don't want a Solo 2. I would like Alden Ehrenreich and the storyline to continue to another movie, but it doesn't have to be Solo 2. It can be something that is another Star Wars story that just intertwines these characters and the situation set up in this movie into the next one. And then so on and so forth. But because of the box office, I'm not sure if they're going to go there now or not.
I think you're going to wind up with a comic book or a novel.
It rings a chord in the aspect of you watch it, and there's all these little references that you want to learn more about. You know, we know that the Crimson Dawn is Maul's little baby. And then I was immediately like, well, what about the Shadow Conspiracy? Well, the Shadow Conspiracy happened 19 before the Battle of Yavin and collapsed that same year. And then 9 years later, he has Crimson Dawn thriving. So I want to know more about that and how he kept that away from Palpatine the whole time and let that grow to a point that it rivals Black Sun and all these other things and yet managed to keep himself out of it. Like there's so much of that I want to know more of. Kira's character, like how she gets where she's at. Like, many of those threads that I can't wait for them to pick up more on.
Yeah, because I think you got to bring, to me, at some point somewhere, you have to bring Kira's story to a logical conclusion, or I don't think he can move on emotionally to engage Leia later.
What kind of reference of those dice make? When I was looking at that, I'm like, we've got to have some closure here, or every time I'm looking at those dice, I'm going to think of her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that's the thing that I really loved about this movie is that I think for the first time in a Star Wars film since Leia, we probably got the most complex and well thought out female character that we've ever gotten on screen.
Yeah, well, I think she's more complex. I mean, because she's duplicitous. Yeah,
Mm-hmm. Well, and she has a lot of nuance to her because you can read those last few scenes so many different ways. And until they give us something else, all of them are probably valid because it's just about your interpretation of it. And that's what makes it so great. Because there is just, I mean, as she's letting, you know, she's leaving, you can tell she's keeping Solo safe because she's keeping his name out of it. But you don't know specifically, is her motivation just to have more power? Is it to find a way to maybe take down Maul herself somehow so she can be the one to power? Or does she want this all to end? I mean, like, there's so many different ways you can go with this. And that's what makes it so cool. Honestly.
Or is she just trying to stay in the game as long as she can?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And
but
it could be that
so
too.
There's so much to her. There was so much mystery that when I left the theater, I was like, I have to have another movie with her in it. Yeah. I need to know more about this character. It's almost like what Maz Kanata said in The Force Awakens. That's a story for another time. That's what I feel like with Kira. It's like, you know, she won't tell much to Han about what she's been through and, oh, if you only knew, and there's been a lot, and, you know, I want to know that story. And I don't want it in a novel. I want
Bruce,
more movies.
Yeah. They're going to Snoke us, man. We're going to get a Snoke background all over again.
Well, and let me say this. I would love another movie, and I would love another movie, and hopefully they'll think about this. Hopefully this will be something that they will give thought to. I'd love another movie with Ron Howard in the director's chair from the beginning. Because I think if there's anywhere the movie does suffer, it is in that a lot of the setups seem quickly done, rushed, not as thought out as maybe they could be visually. And I think Ron Howard on this project from the beginning, this is a very good movie. This is a better movie if he's there when he's from the beginning.
Well, and I think, you know, just to kind of speak to the overarching nature of what do we learn from this. You know, I think this is the reason why, I guess this gets into the news territory a little bit, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think this is why Kathy, and the rumor is, I mean, that we got the announcement from Hollywood Reporter that it's James Mangold for the Boba Fett movie. But I think that's why you have that kind of name attached, because it's a guy who's proven that he can do this type of story with Logan. He's of course he did the Wolverine as well. So you have a person who's proven to be able to do this kind of anti-hero hero type story. And you're probably not going to have to worry about him. You know, I guess is that they finally learned their lesson, and that they are going to be much more careful in who they hire from now on. And it's going to be more about who they think can do the job right the first time more than anything else.
Instead of creating your stable of Star Wars guys.
Yes, because this movie, Solo, ended up costing them much more than it should have if they had just been with, like, a Howard at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think Ron Howard is definitely, with this film, he is
proven that
he can deliver.
Yeah, I want to see him do another one.
Well, and not only him, but what about the writers, the two Kasdans? We have Jonathan and Lawrence Kasdan. Should they come back?
John can do whatever he wants to me. You put John and Dave Filoni together and have them write the other two Solo films? Yes. Done. Sold. Sign me up. Take my money now.
Somehow I think that's like also the script for Hostel Part 3.
But, you know, this movie almost felt to me as if Dave Filoni had some influence on it more so than the others. Again, because there's connections to Rebels and to Clone Wars and even the old novels.
I was going to say, before we move into that other stuff, I do want to remind people, because you guys started this whole discussion with the Cloud Riders and Infest Nests group. But remember, Cloud Riders, as far as connective tissue goes, that's something. And when you talk about this thing being a bit of a love letter to the longtime fans, as all of you guys are, one of my biggest things. How old are you, Matt?
I'm going to be 39 this year.
Oh, so. Yeah, you're a kid still. Okay. But Bruce and I are comparably aged, and I don't know where Bruce stands on this, but to me, when I was a kid, between Star Wars films, there was Marvel. And so the Marvel Star Wars, you know, when people put their headcanon together, that Marvel Star Wars is very much, you know, the good ones are very much a part of my headcanon, very much a part of my headcanon. And so when, you know, when I saw the name Cloud Riders was being associated with these guys, that's, you know, goes back to the Aduba 3 story from the one of the first stories they did right after the original film. It's a very early thing. And the Cloud Riders were featured there. Now, they were led by Sergi X. Arrogantis, who was modeled after Sergio Argonis, the artist, but not Infest Nest, but still that connective tissue. I like seeing that kind of thing because those things are my Star Wars. The Brian Daley novels are my Star Wars. So if they reference them, that is touching a spot in my headcanon that really does give me a thrill.
Well, and that's something that this film did, is that it touched every single part of EU canon. Yeah. Like all the different eras from all the way at the beginning from Splinter of the Mind's Eye and the Marvel comics all the way to the Brian Daley novels to, you know, forgotten PlayStation games to, you know, A.C. Crispin novels
to the other... L. Neil Smith Lando novels got mentioned twice.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like it was running the gambit. And so, again, I think that what this movie proved is like, if you've got it, don't throw it away. Use it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the model that George set up with the Clone Wars with Dave. And then Dave also continued on into Rebels. And I think that's one of the clear connections that we can see is that I think in some ways, maybe Lucasfilm is starting to figure out how to tell stories better. And at least with these story films, they really are finding a way to create something new and something fresh and something that feels familiar all at the same time. And Alex from Star Wars Explained said this today. I was listening to the Jedi Council from Collider. And he said, you know, I just wish they had done that with the sequels, that they had sat down and figured out what their story was from day one so they knew where they were going. And this is my problem with The Last Jedi was just that you this Solo has complete context. It understands its context and how to use it. But the sequel trilogy doesn't have that context because nobody knows what the actual story is for those 30 years.
Yeah.
And because they don't know that, it comes off as hollow. Like it's like a chocolate bunny at Easter. You poke your finger in it, and then it's empty inside. That's what the sequel
trilogy
is.
And then you bite its head off.
And chocolate, too.
It's all the good stuff.
Just add more chocolate inside. Yeah.
But, you know, but George Lucas always visually would hint at, you know, this is what you see on screen. Think about what you may just see off screen. You know, there was always that hint of that larger universe there. And that's what these little tiny references to this larger universe do. And it's what they can do for a fan who's involved and invested in. It washes over people who don't care. It washes over the public that is not engrossed in all this. But for us, it does that little thing that affirms that this galaxy that we're following has life, that everybody in the galaxy is aware of these things that happen. Lando talks about winning a thing at Ocean, and that is straight from the L. Neil Smith books. Later, he talks about the Star Cave Nebula. That's from another of the L. Neil Smith books. You know, those references help us to go, you know what? I'm not wasting my time reading these books because they are adding up to something bigger and better. You know that, Mark, as an old EU guy.
Yeah, Lucas would let the other authors roll with it. And I think that that's something Lucasfilm is taking and looking at is, you know, when you look at the legend stories, which were the storytellers that resonated the most with fans? You know, your Matthew Stovers, your Lucino, you know, people be like, oh, it's like the Lucinopedia. He's brought everything in. Your John Jackson Miller. You know, these authors that would have that connective tissue that would go beyond just their own stories, like Zahn's. You know, Zahn was great, but Zahn was also a little more self-contained. He didn't play as well with the other people. But when you get stories like New Jedi Order, where you had these authors that were all reaching out, taking other characters and working them through, and then Lucasfilm takes that idea of like, how can we do that? You got Dave Filoni doing the same thing on the TV shows, and you apply that to that, and that's exactly what you're seeing. Like when Bruce said, it looked like Dave Filoni had done this, because that's that technique. When Stover would take these little references and flesh them out more like Lucas had intended, you know, like, yeah, there's more story here, but that's not my story to tell. And it definitely seems to be that's something that they're paying more attention to going forward. And that, for me, that's my jam. I mean, when they mentioned Taras Kasi, I was one of the ones that was screaming out loud. I missed the VCX-100 reference. Like, it wasn't until I saw it on the second time and I'm like, wait a minute, that's Hera's ship. Like, I mean, there were so many little things like that that were right there in your face. And Bruce and I were talking about this in the last episode about how when Legends did Luke falling to the dark side in Dark Empire, they didn't redo that in any other format. If you wanted to know the story about how Luke fell to the dark side, you had to get that comic and had to read it. The books reference that. Yeah. And that's what's cool about this is it doesn't just reference, you know, the movies and other books and comics and stuff. It references stuff like what you've missed out on, Scott, with the Clone Wars and Rebels and things like people that were legitimately confused about how Maul was alive. Now they're like, oh, I guess I got to go and check out this Clone Wars and Rebels season and stuff to find out what happened.
But that was what was great about that Maul appearance, though, was because I think there are a lot of people who just think, well, if it didn't happen in the movie, it didn't happen. Even though, you know, Lucasfilm acknowledges all this animated stuff is canon. It is as valid and legitimate as anything that's on the screen and the big screen. So when that happened, yeah, you basically told a lot of those guys, hey, that stuff you're ignoring, it counts. It's legit. Now maybe you ought to go check it out. It's sitting on Netflix
right now. Even your little things, and I think sometimes we have to stop and remind people. It's like, yeah, because, you know, this aspect of a story was mentioned doesn't mean the entire book has now made its way to canon, which is the great thing for some of us. Some of us don't like that. Some of us like it. I'm one. I like it. You bring any element over, I'm excited. Yep. I want to see a Coran Horn. I don't care if it's the same Coran Horn. I want that character over. I want a Gavin Darklighter. I want more than just the X-Wing games because that's canon adjacent right now. I want a legitimate canon version of these characters. I don't care if they're different. I just want to have that bridge work. Yep. One of the things when we were watching Solo that really started to bother me at first was they kept calling the Maw the Maelstrom. And I was like, God, did we change the name? Like, why do we have to change the name? And then we get into the core of it and they're like, there's the Maw. I flipped my Sith, man. I was like, yes, thank you. Oh, thank you. Cause I thought they were going to reinvent the wheel. And I was like, why?
But this
why
is what's so great
when
is
you don't have to.
These references and all these things that we're talking about really work for us. But then I wonder, are we missing what the general audience is not seeing, because they don't see this. They don't understand this. Is this really going to work for them or not?
No, but these things fly by so fast that they're there for us, and if they don't get them, it shouldn't harm them. I mean, they should be fine enjoying the movie.
It just
on its
makes
own.
Your rewatch even more beneficial.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're there's so much stuff I missed.
But it's if
like
they would have done this in The Last Jedi, would we have liked that movie more? Or doesn't it matter?
Well, one, I have to go all the way back to A New Hope, right? And Obi-Wan mentions all of these historical things like the Clone Wars and when I was, you know, a Jedi Knight just like your father. You know, all of these things. I don't know what that means. You know, I just have to try and figure it out in the context of that movie. You know, Solo kind of does the same thing with some of this stuff, especially with the Maul appearance. You know, it's like, okay, something must have happened that I missed now. I got to go figure out how that all works together, right? You know, that's kind of part of telling a big overarching story. You know, there's going to be all these little nuances in all these different places. If The Last Jedi had done this, I think we would have had a different story. Because I think the biggest part about The Last Jedi is not understanding the context of who the characters were at the end of Return of the Jedi, and then having a clear understanding of how you get from, you know, Return of the Jedi, which is point A, point B, that 30 years, to point C, which is The Last Jedi. There's no clear context for how all that truly works together.
And maybe
with
that's
all
why
the players,
the standalone stories are working better, because they have to fall in that context of, we know when,
yes,
this takes
absolutely
place. We know where these characters have to be. We know where this has to lead to, as opposed to it's 30 years later and we can do whatever we want. And we're just going to create this character, and this character has changed and is like this. And they don't have that clear vision of where that stopping point is or where this fits in, because it's almost like creating a whole new universe.
Well, mm-hmm. and think about this too. George changed what our perception was before the prequels came out of, mm-hmm. of what happened during the prequel time period,
yes,
right?
Very yeah. much so.
But
Anakin
also,
Skywalker, in my mind, was an 18-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan showed up. He and his buddy Owen were hanging out. And Obi-Wan comes and recruits him and takes him off to war. That's, you know, what's in my head when the prequels are made, and not this little kid. That having been said, love the prequels. Love the story that was told.
Well, and I think that's the thing, is that George could make it feel like Star Wars because he instinctively, because he's the creator, he knows how it all fits together. Mm-hmm. He always had the overarching plan, kind of like, not everything was crystallized, right?
Sure.
So much changed for George. We all know that. Mm-hmm. But because he's the maker, he intricately understands how his universe works, and he can quickly then fill in the blanks, which he starts to make the story. Now we're doing it by committee, and these, I think you're absolutely right, Bruce, these story movies are working so much better because they are tied to the context.
Mm-hmm. And they almost have
again,
to be, because they deal with
you have to be,
previously
yep.
existing events, and they have to
yes.
kind of establish where they take place within that.
But that's
ironically, they're the ones that I was the least excited yeah. for going in and loved the most. I'm like, how is this? And I hate to say that you know, 7, 8, and 9 are disappointing, but to a degree, they have been disappointing. But for me, it's been more the main big three characters. I was not happy with what they did with Han Solo. You know, Matt, you were talking about how this rekindled your love. For me, this rekindled my love for Han. And I'm still at that point where I'm like, I don't love canon Han, but I'm more accepting to who he is now. Whereas before this movie came out, I kind of closed my door and was like, I loved Han and canon before they did what they did. Now I'm like, I enjoy in Legends version. But now I'm coming back to it, and I'm accepting it in a way that's different. It's like, this is the Miles Morales version of Peter Parker, and I'm okay with that.
See, the thing that I find about Solo, and talking about one of its biggest connections, is how this is kind of, I think, a prequel to The Force Awakens in a lot of ways. And it helps explain that character of Han to me,
mm-hmm.
And that when he has his makeup with Leia and he goes after his son, I'm this is what I want. I would absolutely love for there to be a scene that mirrors that with Kira, where he goes to save her, but it works that time, and it doesn't work with his son.
Yeah, and
I just think if you want to do the tone poem thing, give us that ability. Because again, I think, you know, Han is a character who struggled to be somebody who was a decent human being, right? And to really let that part of him himself shine after all he'd been through. And for a guy who'd never had a father figure other than somebody like Beckett and these other people, what do you expect? You know, so he's going to be somebody who struggles with being married and fatherhood. But he you can tell that he definitely tried his hardest, even if it wasn't perfect. And he obviously loves his wife and he loves his son. And I think this movie helped me make more sense of that in The Force Awakens. And for that, I'm really grateful.
And I always got the understanding, or I always got the sense that this did kind of spring out of the character work that they were doing in writing The Force Awakens. You know, the casting kind of took what they were doing and said, all right, now let's do this. And so I just felt like the Force Awakens was kind of the inspiration for getting this script started. So I think you're right in that respect.
Well, and it's so interesting because Kasdan, in the Art of book, they talk about, you know, his goal was he had lunch with Kathy and George even before the Disney buy. And they're like, hey, would you be interested in doing a movie? And he's like, well, not really. I think I'm done. And like, well, if you could do anything you wanted. And he was like, oh, I'd like to do Solo. I mean, Solo would be cool. Young Han Solo. And George was like, that's perfect. I've always thought that would work. You know, and they kind of roped him into helping out with, you know, The Force Awakens. And it took a lot more time than he thought it was going to. And then him and his son, you know, end up doing Solo together.
But you do
together.
Get the sense that those stories were kind of percolating together in the
same pot. Yeah, I think it does, yeah. So, and obviously, you know, they had some things planned because The Force Awakens was supposed to have connective tissue with Han putting the dice up in the Falcon, and they cut that scene. Mm-hmm. So they definitely were thinking about some of these things. But I for me personally, this movie actually helped my enjoyment of The Force Awakens and the Han storyline much more than it did before. And I will say, I've never been the biggest Han fan. You know, it was always Luke for me and then and Obi-Wan. This helped me find a love for Han Solo that I just haven't ever had. Like, I'm kind of in love with the guy now, and just who he is in this time period. And like, again, there's so much more now that I want to know about, because they created some of the best, most dynamic characters we've had in the Disney era. And, you know, they didn't kill them all, so we can keep using them. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
For me,
I mean,
it's Lando.
Yeah, I was just going to say, too. Yeah, I mean, if anything, I always loved Han and Lando. As I've gotten older, I've loved them more and more, but this movie makes me love them both even more because we've got that backstory. We're just learning more about these characters, and the more you learn about the characters, the more you appreciate and love them. And
yep.
And I just, you know, and it's like, Matt, you were talking earlier about the prequels, and I you know, I just know so many people I talk to that are casual Star Wars fans, and they say to me, oh, the prequels don't even exist to me. I mean, you know, we talk about the sequel trilogy come in and this and that, and George has got it right with the prequels, but I think a lot of people would disagree with that. It almost sounds like to make everybody happy, and what really works is to keep it in that original trilogy time frame. Because I think that's what everybody relates Star Wars to, is somewhere in that time frame, and it all seems to work. If you go too far earlier, people don't like it. If you go too far later, people don't like it. But if you keep it within the Empire and Darth Vader's there and all these things are going on, but you can only mind that for so long. And I keep thinking about these spinoff movies they're going to make that are trilogies or whatever they're going to be. You know, how far removed is it going to be from the stories we've heard now? And is there going to be connective tissue? And if there's not, is it going to feel too foreign to us? Is it not going to feel like Star Wars?
Well, eventually you could get feel for certain parts of the galaxy. Like right now we're looking at it from an era base, but you could have a movie that's as gritty as Han Solo set in the prequel trilogy, more solidified, but just have it be something that's in the Outer Rim, you know? And then you could have something that's in the classic trilogy era, but base it on Coruscant so it looks as shiny and new as the prequel trilogy. I mean, you could play with that more as you put out more of the movies down the road. I think that's definitely something they could work with. For me, what's funny is I was not a fan of Lando at all coming into this. Like, I was excited about the casting of who they got because I felt like that worked the most. But for the character of Lando in Star Wars, I never really cared for the character. But after this film, I was in love with the character. I absolutely love what Donald Glover did to the character all the way around. Personified made me actually appreciate Lando's character more later when he's flying the ship. The fact, like, I've always known that he owned the ship, but for the first time ever, it resonated with me a little bit more. Like, this would be what it'd be like if I was driving my old 86 Firebird after, you know, a friend of mine was owning it for a while. Like, that would be pretty sick.
Circumstances change. You know, that's a great question, Bruce. And it is something that Mills and I have really contemplated. Like, what do you do and everything? And look, I think to me, the Solo movie proves that if you tell a good genre story, give it that Star Wars feel, you can make a movie in any place in any time, right? I could have probably enjoyed this movie if it wasn't about Solo, if it was about a different character in a different time period of Star Wars that had the same kind of things to it, right?
If it was Dash Rendar.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. You know, you could absolutely have made that happen because it was still a good movie. Obviously, it has a lot of connection because it is Solo himself, you know, and we're telling his backstory. And what I also think that they did, too, is they didn't just spoon-feed us everything that in the way that we thought that we would get it. I felt like this movie had surprises for fans that you just weren't expecting it to happen that way. The way he meets Chewie is unique and it feels special. The crew that he meets, the relationship that he has with Kira, I think is a huge difference in a lot of places. I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe Bria and the A.C. Crispin books that's semi-similar, but that's a very different relationship.
Imperial Service is different. That's a new twist.
Yeah, and really diving into these crime syndicates, which give us a whole other side of the Empire, which feels very much like Brian Daly, which is that there's this whole other side of the galaxy. Yes, there's the Empire, but there are these other factions that the Emperor is still using in this time period to get what he wants, because he doesn't have full on control of every single part of the Star Wars galaxy yet, like he does in A New Hope.
And with Brian Daly, it's the corporate sector.
Yeah, absolutely. These crime syndicates kind of feel like,
because they're a little more free enterprisey. Yeah.
Yes. So, and then I mean, gosh, talk about connections. You know, L3 feels very much like Bollocks and Blue Max in a lot of ways. She is just as unique and kind of strange as they
but
are.
Not Fuffy Rock.
Because, Brian Daly novels. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this is something where, again, the biggest thing, if you, and gosh, it's writing 101. Know your character's history and its future so you can write its present. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, then you will be able to create a good story. And that's where the sequels have failed us in that sense, because they haven't truly thought out, okay, all the different points to get them and what the future of them were as well. They're just kind of telling it on the seat of their pants. And you know, gosh, I think, you know, somebody like J.K. Rowling really showed us how you do it right. She knew exactly what was going to happen at the end. Mm-hmm. Some minor things change throughout the storylines. Some people might not die. Some people might die. But in the whole, on the end, she knew what the end was. She knew where her main characters were going.
Speaking of L3 and connectivity, I appreciated her character significantly as well, because she plays on those little tiny threads of the droid discrimination that you see in A New Hope. And one of the reasons I appreciate that is I go back again to the classic Marvel stuff. And as I think I mentioned last week, if you go to issues 16 27 and 29 of the classic Marvel series, they really do follow up on those threads from the original film as well, and start kind of pulling those strings. And so to see somebody on screen in canon working those same angles, it really, again, brought a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. And it plays back on 3PO's original thing about the Falcon having a peculiar dialect.
Yes, yes,
I
mean, it does.
I was hoping for what we got with L3, and the fact that they did that, like, some people complain fan service, but sometimes fan service works. And I was definitely thrilled with that. It was a cherry on the top of my
head. There's nothing wrong with fan service as long as you don't put fan service ahead of storytelling. And they didn't in this movie. There's a lot of fan service.
That is definitely key. And I think we can all think of movies that it's more about trying to please the fans than it is. But to me, this just feels like a rip-roaring Lucasian adventure. Mm-hmm. And then everything else that they do is because it works. You know, it's like John Kasdan wanted and fought for the crime lord to be Maul because he thought that that's what made the most sense. And to have somebody writing a Star Wars movie that understands the context of it and why it should be a certain character, because this is the one we already have, why create something else new when this works perfectly? Again, that's the Dave Filoni style of thinking.
Well, and it shows that the writers know what has come before. Yes. I mean, you know, J.J. Abrams is sitting there and he's writing the Force Awakens, and he probably doesn't even know Maul was alive. The Phantom Menace, where the Kasdans are sitting there saying, oh, no, I know all this backstory, that we can take elements of this that fit into the story.
And how perfect is it, too, that by the end of it all, Maul's faction is responsible for the rebellion getting the money they need to fund all of the fight against the Empire.
And Solo.
Bruce, you had said at the beginning, well, not beginning, but a little earlier, about if The Last Jedi had more of this connective nuances, if I would have enjoyed it better. And I've been thinking about that for the last 15 minutes. And honestly, I got to think that I would probably enjoy it a little bit more if they did do a little bit more of that. Matt, you really hit on the nail, the fact that there's that 30-year gap that we don't really know much of. And when I think about, you know, with The Force Awakens, the things that I really enjoyed were those connective tissues that threw back to that. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, it wouldn't have hurt to have that happen in The Last Jedi. I think it would have benefited the film a little bit more. Do I think it might have taken from the tone of what they were trying to put out? Possibly. But I think overall it may have been a little more beneficial.
Well, I would say
there are a lot of people that came away like,
this is what it's going to hurt me to say this, because I do like The Last Jedi. I really enjoy that movie, but I do see its flaws. I do see the issues that people have. But if somebody were writing that movie that really understood, that could bring those kind of connective tissue into that movie, they would totally understand the Star Wars universe and totally understand these characters, that movie probably would have played out differently.
I don't even know if it's a lack of understanding more so than not caring about that. I'm going to tell my story the way I want to tell it, and I'm not really going to be beholden to anything else. We see that a lot in comics these days, where people, you know, characters who have 40, 50, 60 years of continuity, and a new writer comes in and says, you know what, I don't care about that continuity. I want to tell my stories my way, and if I trample on continuity, then so be it. Interestingly, Mark, and you're talking about, you know, whether you would have enjoyed Last Jedi with more of that connective tissue. I think you would agree that you're talking about connective tissue that is relevant to the story, that is inspired by the story, and that continues the story. You are not talking about a spaceship in the background or a name being shouted out over an intercom.
Yeah, no. I mean, sometimes I'm excited for those
things.
Sure,
no, yeah,
well,
they're exciting, but they're not. It's not that thing that will get inside you and stay there.
Yeah, and that's definitely what Solo nailed, is that every one of these references, whether they're toss away or not, they have some relevance to each of the fans. And I think that that's definitely something that I could have enjoyed a little bit more. I know for me, the thing that I came away with The Last Jedi really enjoying was the next generation cast. And with 7, 8, 9, that's, for me, that's my solace. This is their story. And it took me till the second movie to really get my head around the fact that the big three need to be the secondary cast that they were telling us from the start, but I still kind of have my blinders on going in thinking, yeah, it's their story. And I kind of got my hand slapped.
Yeah. I think, you know, kind of one last thing, I don't want to keep harping on, you know, the sequel trilogy, but I do think that that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that they made, was trying to cram the old cast in instead of maybe just having it be just Luke. You know, it's just Luke. Everybody else is gone. And he's the one who's kind of like responsible for helping a new order. That, or you needed to do what George had planned, which was that by the end of 7, Rey had talked Luke into coming back and he was going to be kicking ass and taking names again, by the second movie. You do one or the other, but the way that they did it, I think, ended up what it felt like was a disservice to the characters that we had fallen in love with and continue to fall in love with all those times we watched the original trilogy. And it did a disservice to tell us that, oh, well, you know, you need to not look at your heroes because, you know, they're not really heroes. We all fall. You know what? I don't need to be reminded of that. I can just look at the freaking White House to know that. So, I mean, but not that anybody in the White House has really ever been a hero to me, but maybe Abraham Lincoln or, you know, George Washington, but they've been long dead. So, look, my point is that I don't need to be reminded of those lessons. That's not why George was telling Star Wars, right?
No, in fact,
he was telling us to teach morals, meanings, and messages that he thought the generation growing up in the 70s had lost.
The timeless stuff.
The timeless stuff. And so this isn't timeless, it's just depressing.
Yeah, but wasn't his concept for the prequels an idea that he had back in the 70s as a comment about government and its
probably
and the Vietnam War?
And obviously the breadth of watching a republic turn into a dictatorship.
There is a lot that is made in this day and age about George Lucas and his intentions. And again, I think I have, the book right back there. The George Lucas biography that came out a year or two ago expressly talks about how George Lucas did not want Star Wars to be political. He didn't want it to be political. But there's a lot of talk, well, you know, he had this belief and he injected this belief in it. Well, you know, he said that Darth Vader was Richard Nixon, which he did say that. But again, there's a difference in inspiration and allegory. There's a huge difference between inspiration and allegory. You can be inspired by, I mean, Chancellor Valorum was inspired by Bill Clinton if you heard his interviews. But I defy you to find anything that is specifically Nixonian about Darth Vader and anything that is specifically Clintonian about Chancellor Valorum.
Yeah, because he actually feels more Chamberlain to me.
Well, who, Valorum?
Valorum, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. So there's a difference in saying this inspired me to do this, and this is really what kind of led me to start telling this story, as opposed to I am making this story, and my inspiration is a direct analog of the story I'm telling, because that is not what has happened with Star Wars over the years.
Well, and that is the thing I think that you were pointing to as well, Scott, is that Star Wars itself, and obviously this is, we all know, George was looking at the overarching myths,
yes,
of the world and the motifs of the world. And therefore, staying in line with that is hugely important. And I think that, I guess in the end, the sequel trilogy references are kind of postmodern and very much non-authorial intent version of the world where history doesn't matter. Only what matters is what we're thinking now. Like whereas Star Wars has always been about the idea that history matters, because if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. And the sequel trilogy is very much a product of this 21st century era. And I think we can see that kind of storytelling lacks the substance that we miss from the things that connect with the very foundations of what it means to be human for all that we have existed as human beings. And that's what George was able to tap into with his work in Star Wars. And that's what's kind of feels like it's missing in the sequel trilogy.
So, Scott, yeah. I want you to go ahead and make a comment to that, but then I don't want to go any further with this because I think this would make a great topic for another time.
Yeah, well, Kyle Newman said the other day on Twitter that and he was talking about why the things he felt fell short in a recent Star Wars film. And one of the things he said that really stood out to me was that it is mired in 2017 and it never seems to escape that. And that really stood out to me as kind of hitting the nail on the head.
That Kyle Newman's a wise man. I find that I agree with him on a lot of things.
Yeah.
Star Wars wise.
He is a very wise man.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen, listen.
Well, we're going to go on to news. We're kind of running out of time now. We've done a full hour of this discussion, which is great. I do want to pick up on what we were just talking about with politics and the current climate of today, and it relates to movies. I think we want to revisit this maybe in another episode here in the near future, but let's go on to the news. We will talk briefly about the box office, but I'm just wondering, Mark, if you can give us just a quick overview of what Variety said about the box office, and let's talk about, we love this movie so much, why isn't it filling the seats like it should?
Really quick, all I had running through my head through this is, I'm Luke Nametaker, and I'm here to rescue you. That's been stuck in my head since Matt threw that out there. They're talking about numbers don't lie, which to me, like, I don't know who to believe. Like, some people are saying it's low. Some people are saying it's, like, the third highest train heist film ever.
Wow.
I don't know what to do. Variety saying, though, the numbers don't lie. Solo earned a disappointing $103 million in North America over its opening weekend and stalled out with $68.2 million overseas. At this rate, it's going to fall short of the $1 billion mark that each Disney-released Star Wars adventure has managed to fly past. Now, the latest installment will struggle to make even half that amount globally. Analysts project Solo could end its run with approximately $400 million to $450 million in revenues, a dreadful result for a film that costs at least $250 million to produce and $150 million to promote.
Yeah, so I don't think the box office is a sign that the movie is good or bad. I think it's maybe there's so many factors that can contribute to this, but I don't want to even focus so much on why we think the box office may be low, but why aren't the seats filling up? Is that because, and how do we get people to realize that this is a good Star Wars movie?
There's a couple different factors at play here. I mean, I'm one of the ones that are quick to say Marvel owns May at this point. So to put your movie back in the original Star Wars slot of May 25th, because that's where it was for nostalgia purposes, I feel like they kind of bit themselves in the butt in that regard. You know, I work at the theater, so I get to go and see movies as a privilege for working there. So I don't have to pay for movies.
So you're the problem.
But I'm the problem for one. But when I did have to pay for movies, I would go and see one to three a year, and that was it. And that was like, they had to be like, I need to see it on a big screen or I'm not going to watch it. And we would really hardline it. So I would have a really hard time if that was my current mentality of going, do I watch Solo right now? Because I really want to watch Avengers and I really want to watch Deadpool 2. And they're coming out before that. Can I wait that long? Like right now, I've only seen Solo twice and I haven't even taken my wife to go and see it yet because I can't use those privileges and I don't want to spend the money on it. So I'm part of the problem, I guess you would say. But at the same time, most of us were in that boat of like, well, do we really need to have the Han movie? Like,
right.
And yet, like with Rogue One, I was pleasantly surprised of, yeah, I guess we really needed this movie because this is
awesome.
But
when you think of the general public, maybe that's what they're thinking too. Oh, it's just a Han Solo movie. It's not Star Wars. It's just, yeah, do we really need a Han Solo movie?
What worries me is if a dyed-in-the-wool fan like myself is like, yeah, I don't really know if I need to see this. Like that, to me, that is part of the problem. And I don't know how they would go about marketing it to me in this general case. Because when I went into this, I had that issue with Han Solo. I didn't like what they did. So I was kind of like, do I really need to have any more of them trashing a character that I once loved? And again, they provided something that gave me solace and backed me away from that precipice that I was at. I was like, man, I'm really starting to hate what they've done with these big three characters. And yet they provided something that allowed me that escape that I didn't think I would have had going.
You know, and this is not talking about boycotts or anything, but I think the fans are kind of part of your front line as far as these things go. And there was a lot of negative sentiment out of fandom from the previous film, and I think that kind of carried over. I don't think there's franchise fatigue, but I know that Disney didn't know it was tracking well. I remember when they decided to move the Avengers up by a week, I said to my son, they're trying to keep it from squashing Solo. It because everything that was tracking with Avengers was tracking mile high box office records, etc., and Solo wasn't doing that when they were polling. So I think, you know, they tried to get the Avengers out of its way so that it could still have a little bit of time to itself and Avengers could die off before it got there. But I think, you know, when a new Star Wars movie comes out, the first thing that happens to me is everybody I know who's not a Star Wars fan says, well, was it worth it? Should I go? And I remember when Last Jedi came out, what I said was, you know, I've got some issues, but I'm not going to taint you. I want you to go see it and decide for yourself, because it is something you do have to think about, and something you have to, you got to watch and maybe watch twice to really start to process it. So I wouldn't taint it, but I know there were a lot of other people who did just go out and say, I hate it, I didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. And so it's not to me fatigue so much as it's, there is a situation where the front line of people who are going to carry the banner, a lot of those people have put that banner down. You know, a lot of those people did not carry the banner after Last Jedi. And so I think there's kind of a general distaste in the public's mouth where they go, you know, we don't know that Star Wars has it right now. We don't know that it's getting it done. And it's a shame, because this isn't the movie that should be happening to.
Yeah, I think, you know, I want to say maybe the biggest culprit here is some greed. Releasing this movie when they didn't have to.
Yeah, they could have pushed it to Christmas.
Yeah, you could have pushed this movie, you know, and it wouldn't have hurt anyone. In fact, you probably, if you had put it out, you know, middle of December, you probably would have earned more money, because the biggest movie I think that I know of that's coming out in December is later in December, closer to Christmas. I think it's a few days before Christmas, is Aquaman.
Mary Poppins.
You know,
and Aquaman is a movie also that no one needs. So,
so, you know, I think that the thing here is that, you know, you only had 5 months between, and I know that that's the Marvel formula, you know, that to have this, you know, we just had Infinity War, and then, you know, in July, we're having Ant-Man and Wasp, right? That's their formula. But I think that if they're, and I think what they're going to do is it's just going to be, we're going to do one Star Wars movie a year. That's going to be it. Because they want it to have that magic, that feeling, that specialness. And, you know, we basically got two Star Wars movies in 1 year, because when you look at when The Last Jedi came out and when this came out, there just wasn't a lot of time to breathe. And then on top of that, because they were so pushed with the production, the marketing for this film wasn't doing what most Star Wars movies do, which build up for like 6 months. It's like 6 months of like them slowly releasing just a little bit more and a little bit more to whet that appetite. Well, they didn't have that time. So,
but do keep in mind, Matt, that Black Panther came out in February, and not even two months later, April, Avengers came out, and both of them crushed. And I have to think part of that is the word of mouth. I have to think part of that is people speaking well of Black Panther and then anticipating the next one. Whereas you had a lot of people who were dyed-in-the-wool fans who did not speak well of the December film, so that by the time May came around, people were not as enthused. Again, I think fandom kind of dropped the ball, because they play a part in the marketing of these movies.
Yeah, but
what's dangerous now is we've got this year and a half gap where people are like, well, maybe there is fatigue, maybe... And we've got the next movie coming out, and you know, episode 8 wasn't that great. I don't know if I'm looking forward to 9, because it's going to wrap up everything. And we've already had two films that kind of were okay, almost great, almost kind of let me down. I don't know if I really want this third one. I'm really nervous about this third one, because it could make it where I hate all three of them. And you've got that time for that worry to build. And what is one thing that Star Wars fans are good at? Worrying over the small things.
Yes. Well, I don't think it's fatigue. I don't believe that. I believe there's always this comparison between Star Wars and Marvel, and I don't think it's really a fair comparison because all the Marvel movies play off of each other and they're all building a continuous story off of each other. We're jumping all over the timeline. Solo has nothing to do really with what's going on in the sequel trilogy. I mean, if you're going to do the Marvel model, all the movies would be taking place within that same time frame in the sequel trilogy, and there would be all these branches coming off of that. The problem I have with Solo is it's the first Star Wars movie that I went into where I wasn't hyped up and nervous. Riley can tell you, when I went to see The Last Jedi, he asked me, are you okay? Because I'm always bouncing around like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. I'm just like, I'm like a rack of nerves. I went to Solo. I was really cool because you know what? I knew exactly where the story was at least going to go. I knew Han Solo was going to live. I knew where he was going to end up. I knew where Lando's going to end up and Chewie. It was just more of answering the questions of, well, how did they meet and how did he get the ship? As opposed to like Rogue One, where it was all new characters and I had no idea what the fate was going to be of these characters. It was something original. Solo didn't get me all excited and nervous because in a lot of ways, it's kind of a bland idea. It's a story about something we kind of already know, and the title's as bland as the idea, and it's just called Solo. Every title has always
interested me. That's how I went into Death Troopers.
Yeah. But don't get me wrong. After I saw the movie, I really loved it. But going in, it was not pulling me in like other Star Wars movies, and that is what probably is happening with the general audience.
So you think there's a marketing flaw? Several marketing flaws is what it sounds like.
I think it's an idea flaw. I don't think this is the movie that's going to fill seats.
I don't,
you know, I would say this, you know, I can definitely see the fact that I don't think it should have been just called Solo. I think it would have been much more fun if they had done something like Han Solo
and
the Kessel Run.
Yes.
Or,
yes.
You know, they should have made it like an Indiana Jones style film, like the Daily Books. They should have done that reference. Yep. And everybody would have got, and then they wouldn't have had to rename it in China because you know what? It would have just been called Han Solo and, you know, A Smuggler's Tale or whatever. So I think that would have been much more exciting if they had done that. I do think, again, you just don't have as much time to market when the movie's being rushed at the end, I'm sure. You know, the funny thing about this movie, too, the work by ILM here is one of the best jobs they have done in 10, 15 years. It's amazing. There's absolutely never been a point in any of the four times I've seen this movie where I've been pulled out because of an effect shot. Last Jedi, I had a few of those moments. Not this. This is legitimately, Star Wars fans, if you're listening to this, which I'm probably sure you are if you've been listening to us for over an hour, if you haven't seen Solo, if you haven't given a chance, I promise you this is the movie that you were looking for. It is everything you never knew you always wanted. It is fun. It is vivacious. It is infectious. It is the joy of Star Wars joys. That's what this movie is. It is like pure Star Wars spice.
Well, okay, so Matt, one of the things you put in the news, and I want to move to that now, is there's a rumor, or I guess the Hollywood Reporter is confirming, a Boba Fett movie. Now, is that something that you would want to see, and what do you think of this news?
You know, I the idea of a Boba Fett movie, it was even lower on my list than a Solo movie. Mm-hmm. But the report from the Hollywood Reporter is that James Mangold, who writer of Logan we mentioned earlier, is going to be writing and directing a Star Wars standalone movie centered around Boba Fett, the feared bounty hunter and a favorite fan character, and the Hollywood Reporter had exclusively learned this. Now, there has been no confirmation from Lucasfilm at this point from this, but Hollywood Reporter does tend to be a very reputable source, and they don't print rumor. And so if they believe this is true, then I'm pretty much sure it probably is. They say, along with other movies that are in the works right now, that which include... you know, a slew of characters, of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi, which Stephen Daldry was in negotiations to direct, even though nobody's got writers on that script yet. So, you know, James Mangold, though, he totally has me interested. because if there's any director they could name for, that's done a movie that I highly respect in the last few years, which was Logan, of totally changing up what it meant to be a superhero film. I mean, they put that movie in black and white on the do the noir version, and it works because it's that good of a movie. So if he could do something similar with a Boba Fett movie, yeah, I'll give it a chance for sure, especially after what I got with Solo, which just blew my socks off.
Well, we may see Solo.
I'm not even wearing socks.
We may see Solo in this movie.
Absolutely.
And maybe this continues some of that story that was set up in Solo that would be in the Boba Fett movie.
Which would be cool, that rumored potential to have a trilogy out of these movies. Now, Bruce, you had mentioned earlier that you didn't think Solo was a movie that would bring people into the seats. And I'm almost in your camp of thinking in there, but I think for me, the thing that keeps me out of that is I really think that if they'd have put Solo in a December release time and given more time to promote it, that I would have came over. And I think that's my issue with this Boba Fett one, is you're looking at Boba Fett, it's a new character. They could do anything with this. Depending on what they do is where my interest is going to lie. Like, if they decide to do something with this character that just completely makes him lame to me, it'll be a total waste. But if they do something that's in a different direction, goes in a route that I wasn't expecting, that pleases me, this could be one of the best things that they've ever given us. I mean, I never thought Boba Fett was going to be a clone of Jango Fett and a bunch of other clones that were the clone army. Like, that's not what I thought the Clone Wars was. I thought Obi-Wan was fighting a clone Jedi. Like, that's what I thought was, they were fighting their own versions of themselves kind of thing. So, you know, ratcheting back what I knew of Boba Fett to that Boba Fett, and then going forward again, watching them change all his backstories and stuff, I'm down with a Boba Fett that could go any different direction here, because I've already lived through that. But depending on what they decide to make permanent for him, I may be like, this was a total waste of
my time. Mark, and you raise a really good point, which is the Boba Fett movie, while I would like to see it, and I think it's going to be good fan service, one thing it's going to have to battle is expectations, because so many people have a, you know, so to speak, headcanon version of Boba Fett, you know, and I've heard people bandy about the idea, multiple people bandy about the idea that, well, Boba Fett's not just one guy, it's a suit of armor and different people take over the mantle and all that. See, that idea drives me nuts. There are other people who that's the only Boba Fett movie they'll accept. It drives me nuts because Boba Fett is to me such a BA supposedly that I can't reconcile that with the concept that he could just be anybody. You know,
right?
It doesn't make any sense to me. So
right, especially with all the history that you get, especially as you'll find out too in the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, they do so much there.
Yeah, so
I want the movie to start with his hand coming out of the Sarlacc pit. That's where I'm at. I don't want an origin. I don't want after dad died and fill that gap.
So you don't want to set
in
near Solo.
I've had that in Legends. Yeah. Okay. I don't want it. Well, that's just it. Like make this the third movie of that trilogy. Maybe then I'd be okay with it, or you know, put a big enough gap in there that we could see Han have some serious growth and get more back to like what Matt was saying, where when you get to, you know, The Force Awakens, you're feeling an actual closing of a character that wasn't originally meant, and yet it works so well with everything that they provide later down the road that you're like, wow, this really is a nice dessert.
But they got, but
well,
they got,
I'm not...
I was going to say really quickly, they got a quality director with a quality reputation. And that's one of the things that we've talked about already about this whole thing early on is, you know, they've tried to kind of get guys with who've had hits, but haven't got a lot of experience, and they've had to try to coach them. And four times now. I mean, how far do you want to go? Colin Trevorrow, Josh Trank, Gareth Edwards was very much a guy who played ball, but he pretty much got taken out of the chair. And then of course, Lord Miller. So these were all kind of guys who had a little something, but there was another skill that they needed to develop. They go get James Mangold. He's a guy who can do it. He's a guy who can step in and get it done.
I'll just jump in real quick. I think Colin was fine until Carrie died, because from all the reports that we had, everybody loved his script then. And then once she passed,
he didn't want to change.
Was not able to come up with a script that people were happy with. And it seemed pretty mutual. You know, for both of them.
We're going to make Leia a Jedi BA, and she's going to be so awesome. Wait a minute, what?
But I also,
oh, my
I
God,
also agree with you
ruined.
Completely. I think this is, again, I said earlier, I think that they have learned their lesson, especially with the amount of money that it ended up costing them to fix Solo. So that, because this is the great thing about what Lucasfilm did, right? They didn't pull a Justice League. They didn't take a movie and just let it go out there and be anything less than perfect. They made sure that this movie was good. They made sure that this movie was not going to ruin their reputation. Disney was very smart in that, but I think James Mangold, being the person that they hired here, Kathy's first and foremost idea is we have to find somebody that we can hire, that they are going to do a great, competent job because we have seen their work before. And my guess is, too, that they've probably done some big-time discussions already of what the story is going to be. Because they've learned their lesson, especially with the Lord and Miller situation. So, look, I know fans want certain types of directors and everything like that. But in the end, Kathy is running a business here, and her goal is to not lose money. And if they hadn't had to spend the extra money on Solo, I don't know if we'd be talking about the box office as much as we are, because it wouldn't have cost as much.
Yeah. Well, for me, I don't really want a Boba Fett movie because I like the character as is. I don't want to learn more about the character. But when that movie does come out, if it does come out, if it really is coming, I will be there the first night. But I want a Boba Fett movie mm-hmm. just as much as I want a Captain Phasma movie. And it's not really all that much. So, but anyway, the last thing we have in news, this is very important. Because we have Star Wars Celebration coming in June of next year.
April.
April of next year. But this month is June. And on June 5th, tickets go on sale. The ticket prices have been posted. If you guys can click on that link, you'll see exactly what's on the website. And the question is, June 5th at noon Central Time, tickets go on sale. What are you going to do, Mark? What are you thinking?
I am literally, I just got the $40 that I need to get my butt to the Order Arrow induction for Camp McQuala this weekend, and I still have to find $40 for my son to get there as well. So yeah, I am so strapped for cash for scouts right now that yeah, the tickets are going on sale. I'm not going to be able to buy them. So this has me like, am I even going to go to Celebration? Cause like, if I hear that these 5-day tickets sell out pretty fast, so like, okay, there's my window of the 5-day shrinking. Will I get one day? I definitely want to go. I feel like I need to be there for my Fellowship of Fandom, get that buoyancy, that pilgrimage that I haven't had a chance to do since Anaheim. I've got to get back there. But where I sit financially, I don't think it's possible. I'm already having doubts. And tickets haven't even gone on sale yet. And the second they go on sale, I am really going to start worrying because then they're going to start selling out. And then my choices are going to be even more limited. Like, so I don't know. Like, I'm starting to get a little worried. I would love to be able to do one of those VIP things. That looks awesome. But $875 when I'm struggling to make $40 for myself and my son right now, I'm like, realistically, right now, at this moment, it's not looking like it's going to be in the cards. I mean, I may have to see about doing a GoFundMe, maybe.
Yeah,
know.
Well, I mean, VIP is really expensive, but if you just want to do the regular option, a 5-day pass, it's $215. So $215 is a lot more easier.
It is a whole extra day this time because it's not four days, it's right. 5 days.
Thursday's kind of a preview day, though, yeah. There's nothing on the stage Thursday. There's store access and floor access mostly.
Yeah. Now you can also do one day.
Kind of smart though when you think about it, because it's usually so hard to get into the floor. Mm. Having a day where it's mostly just you being able to do some shopping,
or picture opportunities.
Yeah, picture opportunities and things like that. I actually think is really smart. Allow people to get. You know, my first experience was Orlando, and I have to say, as much as I enjoyed it, it was also kind of a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're really trying to make sure that it's not that.
You're talking about this past
time.
Yeah.
When you say Orlando, because I mean, that was the third one in Orlando. And I'll tell you, having been to the previous two in Orlando, they weren't like this past one.
Yeah. So, you know, I, I want to be there too, and I'm making my decision on what I'm going to pick up. But you know, one of the cool things that I was just looking at the VIP, and it's like, oh, first access to panels on the celebration stage. You get one private meet and greet with a select Star Wars celebration groups or guests.
I mean, that there is almost worth its weight in gold.
I mean, just, I don't know. There's some things in there that are just like, oh, man. But on a whole, again, when I look at what they are trying to do with making it 5 days and putting it in Chicago in a convention center, which I hear is fabulous and much bigger and looks like it has spaces for a main stage that can hold maybe up to like 8,000 people.
I heard 10.
That's fantastic.
This is the best you're ever going to get in accommodating our fandom size. I will say from Anaheim, I did the museum on the first day. Line was maybe half hour. Got to spend as long as we wanted in there. They'd only let so many people in. You could take pictures and stuff. After that first day, that line, I could not touch it again. And I got in there. I went in with William and a couple other guys from We Talk Clones at the time. Didn't go in with my wife or my kids. And when I tried to get back, it was just insane. It was so that regard, doing an extra day, like you were saying, that could be something very beneficial for people that don't like the big
crowds. Yeah, I didn't have a problem.
Had I known that,
I didn't have a problem going through that museum either. But then, yeah, I saw the same thing later. It was like, you know, a line that you had to wait an hour or two or whatever in. I mean, yes.
That was still early. By the third day, it was a 4-hour line to get in there. And I was just like, there is no way I'm going to wait 4 hours to go through that again.
So
you guys can watch my picture.
So the thing that I'm thinking here. Just think about this, though. We know it'll be episode 9 they'll be talking about. We know there's got to be another Star Wars story that they'll probably be talking about. Could be Kenobi, who knows? Or it's Boba Fett, who knows? We also know they'll be talking about Resistance, the new animated series. Who knows what other announcements there could be as well, since at that point, the episodes are going to be close to being over. And we still know we got the Rian Johnson trilogy. We've got the Benioff and Weiss stuff that they haven't really even talked about. We have all of things. John Favreau's series we could be getting a look at then as well.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm definitely going to get VIP.
There are so many things that for Star Wars that really do look great and have me very much excited. I will say the best thing about last time was the fellowship, was the fellowship of people. I mean, I got to meet Scott Rifen in person for the first time, got to hang out with so many people, got the lovely opportunity to meet somebody like, Pablo or Leland Chi, those kind of things were just like once in a lifetime kind of things. Like the fact that could maybe happen again is, it's so neat. And I really appreciate that they do this, and I'm crossing my fingers that they are working hard to make this a better experience for every single person. And it does look like that by placing it at McCormick Place. So, I'm set and ready to go. I know, Bruce, I think you're pretty much going too, aren't you?
I think so. There's a part of me
Bruce, you will buy a ticket.
I will buy a ticket. More than likely, I will, yes. There's a part of me that goes, I don't know, do I want to keep doing this after Orlando? Like, just, but I do believe what you're just saying exactly, and that is this is a bigger venue. I love the city of Chicago. I've heard that some people are like, oh, I don't want to go to Chicago, you'll get shot. And I know some of you listen to Rebel Force Radio, and Jimmy Mack has said, Chicago's a great place. I've been there many times myself. It's safe. You're going to be fine. You're not going to be in a rough area. So don't worry about that. There's so many great places to
eat. You're
going to
be in a convention hall 24/7 pretty
much. There's just so much there. So outside the convention.
The only thing that's going to happen is you're going to get, raked over the coals with some of the prices you might pay for things.
Maybe, yeah. But also, just staying somewhere. The mass transit system is going to be a lot better than what you had in Orlando. Because in Orlando, if you didn't stay right close to the convention center, you're Uber or Lyft or taxi, and for me that didn't always work. I mean, sometimes my Uber driver didn't even show up. Well, now you can just take the subway or bus or whatever. I mean, it's going to work out really well, Scott. It sounds like we talked before the show here. There, you're kind of 50-50 right now.
I'm probably 20-80, unfortunately, but I'm working on shifting those scales. We'll see what happens. For me. And you kind of have to understand a little bit about me. Orlando is easy. Orlando is
you can drive there.
Orlando's 3.5 hours drive. I do it all the time, and I have a DVC membership, which means I can go stay on property on points without spending any extra money. Yeah, it's nice. It's, you know, when we go to Celebration, we stay usually at Animal Kingdom Lodge, and so yeah, it's beautiful, oh, doing a wonderful place, and we love doing it. And so, you know, Celebration in Orlando is a no-brainer. It happens no matter what. Celebration Chicago is a little different. We've got a trip planned to Indianapolis in July of that year to visit my wife's family. And it's very difficult for me to go, yeah, but I know it's your family and I know that they're getting up there, but Star Wars, honey, Star Wars. So, you know, and to tell you the truth, I do fear a repeat of this past Orlando. It was so packed and so busy. I mean, you have to understand, the previous two Star Wars celebrations in Orlando combined did not have as many people as this last one. Okay. And it was stunning, the difference, because I went in there expecting it to be that celebration where you just kind of wandered into panels. And if you walked in at the last minute, there's still a seat probably, you know, no big deal. Yeah. I mean, I walked in at the last instant on the Star Wars Detours panel from 2012, only to have George Lucas show up at the panel. I mean, you know, you couldn't get near a panel like that at this past celebration. And so...
believe me, I slept in line all
night. Yeah, and see, still couldn't get in. At 47 ripe years old, I ain't sleeping in line. Sorry. I ain't doing it. I don't... There's two things I don't do. I don't sleep in crappy hotel rooms, and I don't sleep on the floor at this age. You know, I feel like I've earned the right at this point to be able to stay somewhere nice and sleep in a comfortable bed. So, yeah, you know... one of the things that's going to have to happen if I can make Chicago happen is there have to be some changes in the way these things are done. There have to be some changes in the way that they allow people into the panels, whether you give them a ticket the night before, maybe you upcharge them, whatever. But there have to be some guarantees that I can actually go see a panel or two that I would really like to see.
And I think I've heard that they have a new system. They haven't announced what it is, but they have said there has to be one.
Well, and Rifen, I know a Big Shot Gangster putting together a crew of so if it's just you and not the whole family, you know, we can probably work out a place, a hotel room place.
And that's an issue because my family enjoys going to this with me, and they have always gone to it with me. So
that's the angle that's going to be different for me, because when we went, we did it as a Disney family.
Yeah, you went to Disneyland.
Time, and my wife was like, you're going alone. We're not going. You're going to go alone next time. So I'll be doing one of those where I'll be looking for other people, not trying to get my own hotel room or stuff. I'm looking forward to that side of the adventure, like getting with 4 or 5 people and renting a house or something, doing something crazy or living on somebody's yard for a weekend. I don't know, but... I got a hammock. I'm ready.
Well, I think this is going to be probably better than Orlando for two reasons, because I think the crowds will be down because the people who went to Orlando are going to say, I'm not going to that again. And then the second reason you have those fans are like, I'm so sick of the new Star Wars. I'm done. And they won't show up. So it'll be a low crowd.
You may be right.
I don't believe that. But anyway, that's just
wishful thinking. Yeah, I heard a couple of you guys talking about those Jedi passes. Understand that for Orlando, they went like that. And so if you're going to get one, you better be there at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central.
Absolutely. And I can speak to that because
my break is actually at 10 Pacific time. So I'm good.
Oh, I'm in an all day meeting with our department, but I'm stepping out at 1 and they know at 1 Eastern I'm out of there, because I'm going to tell you a couple years ago, right before Orlando, I remember it was at 3 o'clock Eastern time. And I was at offsite something or another, or presentation or whatever, and I stepped out of the building at 3 o'clock, and I was on my phone, and my finger hovered over VIP, and I almost bought it. And that was probably 3:10, because as soon as I went into the service, they put you like in a queue. So, you know, you're on hold, you're waiting, and then showed up. I was like, oh, VIP's there. But I think I heard 20-25 minutes after
it was very quick. It was gone.
So I didn't do VIP, which now I kind of regret. Yeah. So I would say, do it. Yeah, you have to be there. Well, no, don't, because if I do VIP, if everybody waits, then I can make sure I get it, and then you can try it later. Yeah. I don't want to encourage everybody to do it.
You're saying I need to start saving for my VIP for the next Celebration yesterday.
Go ahead. In a few years, Mark, you can go to Celebration and be VIP. So.
Yeah, Celebration Alpha Centauri, he's there.
Celebrate Alpha Centauri.
Yeah.
So blast off now so you can make it there in time.
Yeah. I'll be at the Black Spire holding down.
Black Spire, another connective tissue. Black Spire, of course, going to be in Galaxy's Edge.
Yep.
Well, we're running short on time, so I want to go ahead and hit Boba's Bounty. If anybody has anything, you don't have to, but I know, Scott, you have something.
I do.
So I definitely want to hit on you on that.
It's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
Well, Bruce.
You're looking good. Thank you. Mighty fine.
It's funny you say that, because I was going to say, Lando is not the only one who's a smooth talker.
Ooh.
Solo.
That is nice.
You got one of the buttons.
I got a couple of them off the waitress the other day. She literally said,
so this is
she came over, their Solo promotional buttons that the wait staff is wearing at Denny's.
From Denny's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says $3 trading cards.
Yeah.
You talk the buttons
yes, sir.
Off a waitress. Lando she, would be impressed.
Is there anything else I can get you? Yeah, what do I have to do to get one of those buttons? And she just looked and she said, I'll give you some. And she went away and she came back and I got buttons. So I thought that was pretty special. That's unique. That's something not everybody will wind up with.
That's true.
That's awesome.
That is true.
Wow, I need to go to Denny's and ask for their buttons.
Sweet talk them. Sweet talk them, baby. Sweet talk.
Just like I was just doing
I got
you.
A question about your uniform and how I can bring it home with me. Slap! No! Not that! No! Button slap! No! Not that kind of button! I'm in a similar boat because, you know, my theater didn't have one of those cool fan events, you know, because we're a small town. We're not that cool. But other people, AMC theaters, were having those, and they had those pewter dice going
out. Oh, wow.
I threw out a thing going how much I would love to have gotten one of those, and David Senden hit me back. I was like, hey, got a set coming your way. So I got that. It was mailed out yesterday. So I'm like, yes! So excited.
Awesome.
Well, that's funny great. Because, well, one, my Boba Bounty is, well, tomorrow going to see Solo for round 5. But two, I was not as lucky as you. I put out the call and nobody called me back about the dice.
Oh.
So I went to the old trusty eBay, paid more than I should probably, and I've got the dice hanging in the car now.
Nice.
I feel like Han. I'm not going to lie. I am doing the Corellian drift all around the corner.
I've got to do this. I've got the Rogue One, the Nissan Rogue Rogue One edition. I've got
you
to,
do
I've
need the
do
dice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, and these dice work twofold because while we can enjoy being a pilot in our skiff, we can let our wives take them and hold them in their hands and look all mourningful, and we can have that mourning Han scene.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, hopefully my wife's not mourning me anytime soon.
Well, if you keep doing the Corellian drift, she might be.
It's true. It's going to happen.
You know,
Hey, Bruce, do you know what just popped up on my Skype now? Daniel Jose Alder's online.
Oh. Well, that's so interesting because we have an interview with him coming up right here in a few seconds. So, by the way, my Boba's Bounty is the dice too, because Michael Morris came to me after we watched Solo, and he's like, "Oh wait, I got something. I have to go in my car real quick." And we were in the parking lot, and King comes back and he says, "Hold out your hand," and he puts the dice in my hand just like Kira did with Han, and he got me some dice, so I have those too. So they're hanging in my car right now too. So that's pretty cool.
Those are the dice that you didn't think he was giving to you that you were going to steal, and then he was like, no, you can have them?
Exactly. I was like, oh, these are really nice. I started handing them back. He goes, no, they're yours. I was like, oh, my, thank you. So, before we go to the interview with Daniel Jose Older about the novel Last Shot, Matt, where can people find you online?
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. You can also find me on the 602 Club podcast, which is over on a network called Trek FM. If you're online, it's trek.fm. Of course, it's anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts or anywhere else. General Geek Show, but we talk a lot of Star Wars. We did our full review of Solo, like I said, which was a lot of fun. And so check that out. And then last but not least, I think folks are really going to be excited about if you haven't ever checked out Aggressive Negotiations, John Mills and I just sit back and just talk about Star Wars like two guys, you know, like over a beer, you know, like we're just friends batting around ideas about Star Wars. We've had some great guests on too. Somebody like our good friend Nick Anastasio, who's an ILM editor as well as was the editor on the Clone Wars. So those are always fun episodes. And Henry Gilroy recently has been on a few times. So, you know, great opportunity just to kick back. If you love pure Star Wars goodness, that's what Aggressive Negotiations is every week. So.
Awesome.
Hey,
yes.
Bruce, thanks for having me back. I love being on Star Wars.
I love having you here. And, you know, yeah, and that's such a great show. I love Nick. I love Henry. I love John. And I also love you. So it's a really great show. Scott, where can people find you?
Oh, I'm all over the place. I'm rife on Twitter. My Star Wars story. That is, as I think I mentioned to you last episode, I actually have an episode right now in my editing software. Working on it to put it out, which is the first time in a while. I kind of took a break. I had a hard drive failure last year and lost a couple of interviews that I was really attached to. And so I'm trying to start things back up.
That'll
oh, yeah.
Kill your drive
oh, yeah.
Real fast.
It just nice. I saw that, what you did there. And it really does, though. It really just absolutely wipes you out. And I was demoralized for a while. And as I was preparing to commit Harakiri, I realized that I could continue on and just start over again. So that's what I've been doing. And there should be a new episode out, I'm going to say, inside of 2 weeks. I do a
All
lot
right.
of editing
we'll be
on
looking
those things.
For that.
Yeah.
Yes. Love those shows. And, of course, you can find Mark on Twitter at IllogicalRogue2. You can find me on Twitter at Admiral_Rex. So let's go and hear the interview with Daniel Jose Older, the author of the Han Solo Lando Calrissian novel, Last Shot. And Mark is going to take it away.
This is Catherine Tabor, and I play Padme Amidala, and you're listening to the Star Wars Report.
Thanks, Bruce. Today we're joined by New York Times bestselling author Daniel Jose Older to discuss his latest book, Star Wars Last Shot. Please welcome Daniel Older to the show.
Hey, what's going on? It's great to be here.
Hey, good to talk to you, man. I'm excited about this book. It's been pretty fun. Before we get into the questions, I've got this delicious cover here. I absolutely love the idea that they gave your book dual covers like this.
Me too.
You know, I'm a big fan of Han Solo more often, but man, that cover for Lando is glorious. Like I had to switch it right over.
It's amazing. The blue and yellow and that somehow that pose is just iconic. Like I adore it. Man, yeah. It's perfect. And it's perfect for the book because this really is like a 50-50 Han Lando book. So it makes sense.
Yeah. Now, tell our listeners how your new novel, Star Wars Long Shot, you know, what's the heart of your story?
I would say friendship, honestly. I mean, I think it's really about these two, you know, rogue smugglers turned heroes and their long journey, you know, just being who they are and kind of going in and out of each other's lives in different moments. There's definitely a heist and an adventure wrapped up in that, and that's at the forefront. Mm-hmm. But I think deep down inside, it's two men who are kind of like, moving towards middle age and trying to figure out what they're going to do with their lives and save the galaxy at the same time, right?
Yeah, and you know, while I was reading this, it made me appreciate Lando's role in Return of the Jedi more. Like, you know, we watch him fly in the Falcon and stuff, and we always knew it was his ship, but for the first time ever, I'm rewatching that, and I'm like, that's got to be an odd position for him to be back in, like, your first hot rod kind of thing. And everything Han's done to it, like, that just really made me appreciate that part of Lando in that movie in a whole new way. I'm really excited
about
cool.
that. I hadn't even thought of that. What I'm looking at is like, you know, Lando saves the galaxy and like, I'm glad he gets a chance to do that. But I feel like Return of the Jedi, I mean, granted, Jedi isn't really about that moment, but let's not forget that Lando Calrissian saves the galaxy. You know what I mean? Like he destroys the second Death Star. And that's so dope. And like, you know, I just want to give him credit for that. Like,
yeah. And in fact, when I got to that part where you were talking about that, I was like, yeah, that's true. He did. Now, who is your favorite legacy character to write? And how difficult was it to write in the voice of these beloved characters like Han, Lando, etc.? For instance, with Han, were you channeling Harrison Han or was it like a fresh take?
I was definitely channeling Harrison Han, mostly because I haven't seen the movie yet. Mm-hmm. I've read the script. Okay. So I was reading the script and I was hearing Harrison's voice in my head reading the script.
Nice.
And that was kind of my, that was like my compass, you know, like if I would write a line and then I would try to hear it in the way that like Billy Dee or Harrison would say it. And if I could, then I would keep it. And if I couldn't, I would have to adjust it.
Excellent. Basically. Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, did you get any inspiration from the Legends books by chance? Have you had any chance to read any of them? I mean, it seems like there may have been some loose similarities between the droid takeover plot in this book and the plot of the New Rebellion or Lando being a droid manufacturer.
Right. No, not really, actually. The most of my inspiration comes from the recent canon novels.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I was impressed. Like, there were so many different things that I was picking up that, so I'm a big Legends guy. So, like, I'm always looking for those similarities, whether they're there on purpose or not. So anytime I feel like one's purposeful, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Right. There were a lot of those moments in your book.
That's good. That's actually completely amazing because that wasn't the inspiration. And I love hearing that. And a number of people have said that. And I'm always like, wow, that's wild. You know, I didn't, you know, but I love that people, I mean, that's the best thing about storytelling period is that you put something out into the world that different people take different things from it. And I think that's so amazing that, you know, people make, who was it? Someone I was talking to on an interview recently made a whole point about, you know, Faizen and just the connections with him being a doctor and all this complicated stuff that I just hadn't known was in there. You know, it's like so cool, you know, to hear other people just take it and run with it.
Yeah. Now, your story is set across multiple time frames. So what was your process of fleshing that out?
You know, I'm actually like a real start to finish type writer. I hate outlining, but Lucasfilm requires an outline, understandably. I totally get that because you don't want someone to turn in a whole book and you're like, what is this? You know, like start from scratch. So I outlined, I gave them the outline. They were into it. I started writing. And then I think I must have done this on purpose, but somewhere in there, I was like, this isn't long enough. this outline is for a much shorter book. So that actually worked to my benefit because then I got to go off the rails and, you know, write the way I like to write, which is without an outline. So I tend to, even with complex time jumping situations, I tend to just go as I go and figure it out as I go, basically. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I knew that things would escalate in frequency. The time jumps would escalate in frequency some as certain things heated up. But also, like, sometimes we would just have to really stay in the present or, you know, it would just depend. I mean, ultimately, like, you have a reader voice and a writer voice and an editor voice in your head when you're writing. Okay. And the job is to, like, tell the editor voice to shut up. Can we swear on the show?
Yeah, we'll keep it to a minimum. I can go back in and take care of any that slips.
I'll do my best not. Anyway, you tell the editor voice to just shut the beep up, right? And then, but you want to write with the reader voice in mind because you want to be able to check in and be like, what do I want to read next? You know, what am I curious about in this story? What do I want to find out what's going to happen? And then sometimes you have to withhold that so that the reader's like, but, you know, but sometimes you want to give, you know, so it's always like balancing out those things.
Okay. See, I had a lot of those but moments where it would go from one time frame to another. And I was like, I want to know what's happening next. It was hard not to jump ahead. Like I sometimes I will do that. I'll spoil myself by jumping forward and stuff. So I was biting my tongue, trying not to do that. Now, what were your favorite new characters to write here?
Oh, man. You know, Peekba is obviously – they were all really fun. Honestly, I had a great time writing all those characters. Taka is a favorite. Kasha was a lot of fun. It was fun to have Kasha play kind of as a foil to Lando, as in someone who's reckless and a warrior but also takes life very seriously. You know, it has like a cause, which Lando is becoming. You know, Lando, again, saved the galaxy, like joined the rebellion. Same with Han. Like, these are some reckless boys that turned into very, you know, like responsible men in different levels, but still hold on to that thread of recklessness. And then Taka is also an interesting foil, I think, to Han. Taka sort of embodying a lot of the recklessness that Han had when Han was younger. So, yeah, there were just all these kind of fun interplays. But then Peekba was just sheer a good time to write. Like, Peekba is hilarious to me. And every time I would, the only challenge is that no one really speaks Ewokese except Kasha. So there'd be all these moments where I was like, well, Kasha isn't in the room. So no one knows what the hell Peekba is saying. And they're just going to have to figure it out, you know? Oh, and Chewie does speak Ewokese, but like, you know, that also doesn't speak English. So.
Yeah. There was a great line, and I had it down, but my phone's not bringing it up, where Leia was talking about the relationship with the Twi'lek. And she's like, no, I'm worried that he might actually be in love this time. And they're like, forever player Lando? Like, that was a great moment. And to get it from Leia's perspective was awesome.
Right. I'm glad you like that. I mean, you know, people can be a lot more trouble when they're in a serious relationship than when they're roaming around the galaxy, you know.
So, you know, like I said, I've been a Legends fan, and Han Solo was always my favorite character in canon before they did the split. And, you know, things have changed. And I found that I'm not liking the Han Solo character as much in canon now as it was before, but your book was the first time where I felt like it was getting back to the roots of Han Solo. In a lot of ways, it felt like it was Han Solo when I first read him in Heir to the Empire. You know, he had just becoming a dad. The insecurities and doubts, like, you really got into Han's head and nailed that down. And it really, I mean, for me, like, that opened up my heart to the character.
And, that's cool.
I mean, I kind of shut the door on him. Was like, you know, he's not my Han anymore kind of thing. And I took that as my solace. Like, you know, the big three for me weren't the same as they were in the other ones. But man, you getting into the head of Han and really breaking it down in a way where it wasn't just him being a jerk. Cause it felt like in all the other books, it's like he'd rather just go out and do these other things and be irresponsible. And in this case, it wasn't so much that he was irresponsible. It's more that he is out of his element. He has no idea how to be a father. And man, you just nailed that to the floor. Oh,
thanks, man. I really appreciate that. That's really, really cool to hear. I mean, I thought a lot about it, you know, like, how do you fit? First of all, like you asked earlier, you know, how do you write such a legendary voice? Mm-hmm. For me, it was like I've been hearing those voices literally since I was three. So, and I've loved Star Wars that whole time steadily. So there, that kind of, I don't want to say nothing's easy, but that felt very natural. Yeah. But then it's like, how do you fit that character into what we know about him in the new canon or in the canon? And that's a complicated thing because we know the marriage falls apart, you know, but we also know it. It falls apart like a solid chunk into it, right? Like there's a good decade or two of marriage that sort of doesn't work. And I loved in like Bloodline that we get a sense that they kind of find a balance, or they found a balance at some point, you know, where like they go off and they come back.
Yeah.
And I think that's beautiful. Like I think we sort of have a very stagnant and stale idea that like this is what a happy relationship is. They're together in this nuclear family all the time. And that's too simple. And like there's folk like Han is in his heart a rambler. And so if they can find a way for like that to balance out with Leia being the politician that she is, that's beautiful. So that was kind of my end goal, was like, can I get them to a place where they're coming to understand that about themselves, that they're deeply in love and they want to work it out. And they also have like very different hearts.
Yeah. Now, you know, we're going to jump ahead a question here because you mentioned Pika. So Ewoks, what inspired the inclusion of so many Ewok references and the fact that we had Pika no less as a supporting character? I mean, there's one part of me that's kind of like, oh man, an Ewok. Like this brings back, the X-Wing stories where they had Ketch, the running joke of the Ewok flying the X-Wing and TIE fighter. So I love the fact that you brought it in, but what inspired that?
That's a great question. I honestly don't know. I mean, Jedi is my favorite Star Wars movie, hands down. Okay. So that's part of it, probably. That's the first one I ever saw. That's what I came of age with. And so there's probably a part of my mind that automatically jumps there. I wanted a hacker with them, and I wanted, you know, the sort of least predictable hacker that we could find, and that was obviously an Ewok. I wasn't just trying to be cute with it, which I think some people think is what happened. I did want it to be like just an unusual choice, but I also think it's very grounded in canon. You know, like in Jedi, we see an Ewok jump on a speeder bike and ace it, like know exactly what to do.
That's true.
And like just rule Endor on a speeder bike with no prior experience, no user's manual, no internet to let them know how to do it, no YouTube videos. They just kill it, you know? And I feel like all of the like, ho-humming that we've had from like whatever the, you know, neckbeards and stuff about like, oh, Ewoks are a primitive culture, you know, like being upset that there's an Ewok hacker. They're not paying attention.
Yeah.
B, this is a couple years later. Mm-hmm. You know, after there's been this kind of like convergence of cultures, you have no idea what happened on Endor. There may have been a tech boom on Endor in that time. It doesn't take that long. You know what I mean?
Like, no.
People learn.
I think so about all the times I've played the games with the speeder bike, and I can't keep off the trees. So, I mean, that point alone, it makes a lot of validity to the point.
Also, like, they are clearly tech geniuses. When you look at the booby trap situation, like, they defeated the Empire. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have the technology, but they know how tech works.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's totally credible. And then I also just think it opens the door for a lot of hilarious situations, you know, and I think it's fun to check people's assumptions, you know, which is not for nothing how we are first introduced to Pika, because they assume that she's a receptionist.
Yeah. and I love how she held the grudge on that one. That was
great. Yeah, she was mad with that little tree trunk coffee mug. You know, I really want one of those, man. Like, I need a tree trunk coffee mug.
Now, and, yeah. and you bring up another good point too. I mean, even with the traps that they use when we're watching Return of the Jedi, you know, they're just logs that are hung up, but they know the precise points to hit those things to take them out. Like, I mean, that's not just a lot of luck. I mean,
that's genius.
The Force is guiding it. Yeah. I thought that was a really fun character. And you said something that just kind of resonated with me. You know, your jump on point was Return of the Jedi. And I've always said for a lot of people in our fandom, you know, there's a part of us that kind of stays where we first jumped in. So with my kids, my son came in on the Clone Wars. So he's all about clones. Like, that's his jam.
I love the clones.
My littlest daughter, for her, everything Star Wars is Star Wars Rebels because that's her Star Wars. For me, I was more in the New Jedi Order era. So like that became my jam. But I've noticed that with a lot of people, like, you know, you got the original trilogy people and then the prequel trilogy came out and it was hard for a lot of them to accept that because it was different from what they knew and stuff. But so I like the fact that for you, Return of the Jedi was one of the ones that, you know, resonates for you. And that definitely comes back on that point that I feel about fandom. You know, it's like whatever we first get, that is the bedrock of our fandom.
Right. It's pretty fascinating to watch the conversations and people are really passionate. I had someone in my mentions the other day talking about how they don't consider the books canon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it doesn't matter what you consider canon or not. You know what I mean? Like, you can not like the books all you want and you can be mad about that, but they're still canon. You know, like canon isn't an opinion. It's what is it. And you know, that's just what it is. But I do think it's really fascinating. Cause I've talked to, like, you know, tweens and 8 year olds that, like, all they know of Star Wars is Clone Wars and Rebels.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me because, like, so they know Anakin as Anakin and we met Anakin as pre-Darth.
Yeah.
And like that's just like mind boggling. Like, I can't think of another franchise or really just narrative thread, you know, in our lifetime that does that. Has that kind of span to it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
The closest that I could think of, we were just watching it the other day with my son. It was The Hobbit, and they did the Hobbit was backwards, and he was sitting there going, well, how did Elagus get here? And I'm like, you're thinking of it backwards. This is the prequel. Right. Like, I had to set it up.
Right. Definitely.
Now another, we got a Marvel Comics new starlet that shows up in your book. What did you know about Sana Staros going in, and whose idea was it to utilize her for your story?
That was totally me, because I love that character. She's just so badass. But, like, again, she plays really well off, like, Han. You know what I mean? Like, and Lando, actually, when she shows up with him. Actually, my favorite issue with her in it is the one, it was fairly recent when they end up in Coruscant, I think. It's her and Lando. And they're doing that whole, they do, like, a whole heist, and then she brings the money back to an orphanage on Nak Shaddaa.
Awesome.
I was like, she's so badass. Like, she played Lando. Like, who plays Lando? You know what I mean? Like, she played his ass. and you get the sense that, like, but she still has this really sort of, like, heart at the bottom of it all. And I think it's cool to have a character that can run circles around them, you know, and, like, kind of come out on top, even though she gets really frustrated with Han, obviously, throughout the book. But, yeah, she's fun.
Now, this next one, when I wrote it, I think I may have misunderstood the scene. Okay. So I've changed the question a little bit, but when we see Han meet Maz for the first time, is it the first time? Because
Not necessarily. No, it's probably not the first time.
Okay. So what helped bring that scene to life? Because at first I thought it was their first time meeting and I thought it was really well played. But then when I read it a second time, I'm like, maybe this isn't the first time. Maybe she's just playing a little loose, like they're not that close yet.
Yeah, they know each other. But he goes to, that's like the spot, you know, folks come through that spot all the time, especially smugglers. Because it's really off the radar. Like, the Empire is really not hip to it, or they're just kind of turning a blind eye. You know, it's not a whatever. So a lot of people come through. But I don't think they've had a lot of FaceTime up to that point. But they definitely have met. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I just wanted to check in with Han in a moment when he's just struggling. You know what I mean? Like, but in opposition to his struggle as an adult, like older, middle-aged Han, you know, struggling with, like, the responsibilities of having a kid and all this other stuff and stepping on Legos and all that stuff. But, you know, young Han is like, he's a mess. You know, like, he's drunk. He doesn't know what he's trying to do. He's in debt. He's just going through all these things that, like, a lot of millennials are going through. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fun to kind of have a character like Maz who really has a shit together, let's be honest. To play off and to kind of, again, check him a little bit and be like, it's not all about you, dude. Like, you think it is. But it's like with that moment when he's like empathizing with the song that that's playing in the bar, and he's like, man, why is he like reading my mind? And she's like,
that's great.
He's talking about Dathomir. Like, he's talking about being exiled from his home planet. This has nothing to do with you. And he can't really wrap his head around that.
That reference to the song immediately made me think, like, is there a bigger story about Dathomir there? Like, I don't even know if that was a throwaway reference, but it immediately got my mind racing off on these other tangents. And I love that about how the books have always done that.
So me too. Me too. Thank you. I was really surprised they let me keep that.
The other thing that I found surprising, and I think it kind of goes into like the opposite of what you talk about with Han here, or maybe it's similar to Han. Lando at his young age was very promiscuous in his own mind. I was kind of blown away by how quickly in his mind he's like, I'm going to sleep with her. I'm going to hook up with her. Like, I had a friend like that in high school that we were always like, dude, you can't get with every girl. But he thought for sure all he had to do was put his mind on. And that was totally Lando. And yet that felt so natural for that character 15 years ago. Like, okay, I could get it. And then I can't wait to see Solo for that, because I kind of want to see Solo in the aspect of, now I've got an idea of who Lando was before Solo. To see him kind of transition to who we see when he's like, hello there, who do we have here? Like, I am loving that.
Exactly. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I just like, you know, it's good to have, I wanted to have fun with Lando. You know what I mean? Like, he's a fun character, and it was an opportunity for, I love what Rian Johnson said when they were talking about the whole Canto Bight scene, right? Mm-hmm. He was like, we always get these like dens. And I'd actually already written this scene when I read that, but I was like, oh, good, we're on the same page about that. But he's like, we always get these like underbelly, seedy underbellies, and like smugglers, the cantina, and like just like the whole dregs of the galaxy. But like somewhere there's rich people having a great time. And like sometimes we need to see that a little bit, besides just the Empire, you know, obviously. Mm-hmm. But like, so that's where that whole opening scene with Lando is, which not for nothing starts with him getting dressed. You know, because that's so fundamental to who we've come to understand as Lando is.
Cape choice.
Cape choice, right. Like, but the whole piece coming together and like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I like to dress up nice, but I'm not a snappy dresser like that. But I know what it feels like when you have it right and you're just like, boom. And you feel like you just got an extra pep in your step based on the fact that everything comes together versus when Han gets dressed later in the book. And he's just trying to like get his like, you know, he's just trying to like tuck in his shirt, and it's like barely working. Like, he's so non-functional on the fashion level, but he just wants to be comfortable. You know, he's just a rugged pilot that just wants to be comfortable in his comfortable same old jacket that he's been wearing for 40 years. He's happy that Leia remembered to pack his underpants. You know what I mean?
Yep. I also like the dynamic between L3 and Lando, way that they worked off. That's another character that your books got me really excited to see fleshed out in the film, because, I mean, there have been characters in Legends that were like that. There was a character named I-5 that was a sentient droid. But those tend to be a lot of fandom's favorite type of characters, those type of droids. Chopper is another one. And so, like, I have a feeling like this is a character that people are going to want to know more about. And I'm really hoping that character makes it through Solo so we can see her show up again in other places.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I just read the script, but immediately the character came to life for me, and I was just like, oh, this is great. Like, I can run with this, you know, because what I like about her is that she's very, you know, the idea that she's like a droid rights activist. Mm-hmm. We kind of know that about her. That's public information, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's out there. Right. I lose track of like what's what, but yeah, like, you know, but I like that she's not a cartoon about that. You know what I mean? Like, it's very easy to do a cartoon activist and just have her be like, rah, rah, you know, like whatever. But she's super intelligent. Obviously she's a droid, but like she has the analysis, and for a droid, you know, she has a lot of heart, and like they have this, again, friendship. Like, Lando and L3 have a deep friendship, and they understand each other in ways that even Lando doesn't consciously get. So it was fun to kind of build off that.
See, I remember her saying one line from a trailer where she's like, I'm really glad we took this job. And I kept hearing that voice whenever time I was reading.
It really
worked. Like, all it took was just that one little bit of audio.
Which is
actually one of our next questions. For the audiobook, is it true you had the honor of narrating with Mark Thompson and January Lavoie? And what was the best part of that process? What was that process like?
The best part was everything up till I listened to it and realized how much better they were than I am. It was, I mean, I'm proud of my narration, but especially Mark, like he is Han and Lando. Like he nails their voices 100%. And I particularly like for January, her L3 I think is phenomenal. Like,
oh yeah,
she kills L3. She's great in every way. He's great in every way. And then it's my turn and I'm like, hi guys, you know, like, but I just don't do impersonations. I mean, I do the audiobooks for my urban fantasy series, The Bone Street Roomba. And like, I wrote those and I know those characters, you know, up, down and sideways, cause I made them all up and nobody has acted them yet. So I don't have to impersonate anybody. So like, it was just easy to run with it.
Yeah.
But in the booth, but having said that, it was really fun. I had a great time. You know, Kevin's an amazing director. It was really, really fun.
No.
And the production is amazing too, by the way. If you haven't listened to them, they do sound effects, you know, they do the pew pew pews and the like music in the background is so cool.
Now, did they come to you with that or were you just like, you know, I have some experience, like, could I do something like that?
You know what it was? I had done I did the one for my story and from a certain point of view.
Okay.
But I can't remember. I think we probably just mentioned to them that probably when we did that, we were like, by the way, you know, I do these and whatever. And so, they were like, oh, cool. And because it's divided up, you know, into different characters and different chapters, it made a lot of sense to kind of have different narrators. So it worked out.
And that works a lot. Yeah, I noticed that with the audiobook for the Ahsoka Tano book, they let Ashley Eckstein do some of the reading and stuff. So it seems like they're bringing people in that regard. And it's definitely a really cool opportunity because, like, I haven't had a chance to listen to the audiobook yet, but I plan to just because of the fact that they do it that direction. And you know, I work at a theater also, so I, you know, bust out my vacuum cleaner, pop in the audiobook, and just get lost in that galaxy far, far away. So
nice. That's cool, man.
The other thing I noticed is that there's no chapter numbers in your book. We've got Han's blaster for when we're in his. We've got Lando with Sabacc cards, and then when we have both, there's both of them. And then when we have the scene 20 years in the past, there's neither. And that's when I noticed that there was three little dots and the dots would fill in too. That was brilliant. Do you know, was that you or did someone else come up with that?
That was all Del Rey. I got to give them credit for that. Yeah.
They hooked you up on that.
They did it. They did that thing. I know. I was just like, however you guys want to do this, let's do it. But they figured that out and I was very impressed.
Man. Yeah. I got to admit, man. There is so many aspects about this book, not just the story, but the quality of the actual stuff. I mean, you've got pictures of the Falcon in there. I mean,
I know.
I'm floored. I mean, Del Rey is definitely up in their game in that regard. I can put it to words, man. It's just so awesome.
Definitely. No, yeah. And the Phoenix, it's Phoenix coming up. Phoenix, the Comic-Con. I don't know what it's called exactly, but that's coming up this weekend. And, there's another one and they have a con only edition. It has Chewie on one side and L3 on the other.
Oh.
And it's so cool.
Oh, I have to find somebody to hunt that one down.
Yeah. See, because it's only at these cons and, like, it's amazing. Yeah.
So the last thing I have for you over here before I get you off here is, what do you think was the hardest part of writing this book for you?
Probably that moment I mentioned earlier when I realized I was coming up short on word count. And I was like, but I'll say the shout out to Charles Soule, actually, because is that how you say his name? Soule?
I'm terrible with names. I'm just lucky I got yours right.
Oh yeah, you did. No, he's awesome though. I love his comics, man. I love his comics. And we were on a panel for, From a Certain Point of View together at New York Comic Con last year. And I was in the middle of the book and I was actually in that moment where I was like, what's going to happen now? Like, and on the panel, he was talking about writing Lando because he did the Lando comic, which rules. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, you can't tell Lando's story without gambling because Lando's a gambler. And I was like, word, that's a great idea. And I was like, oh shit, I was about to do that. So all the gambling is that's like, thank you, Charles, for that because, I didn't have that in there because I'm not a gambler. I don't think in those terms, like I've never. There's gambling movies I like, you know, The Sting is amazing. They're out there, but it's not like my preferred choice. You know what I mean? Like I don't, and it's not the gambling that I like about those movies. It's the acting and the direction of the story. So it just didn't register, to do that. But then I was like, oh, you know, I could invent a whole gambling system. Cause one thing about Star Wars is they're really expansive. You know, they're not trying to have Sabacc be every time everyone's always playing it. Like there are other games in the galaxy, you know what I mean? It's cool. So I got to really come in with that Toydarian character and, you know, that whole other system that's like an offshoot of Fives and Gore's creepy cult and everything. And that just became really fun to sort of build up. And then to have as like an anchor early on that we could come back to later, you know, and have a moment of real narrative tension based on actually, you know, gambling and cheating, of course.
Well, excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate this very much, as will our listeners. Is there any contact information or any of the projects you're working on out there you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And thanks. This is really fun. So I'm on Twitter at DJ Older. I talk a lot of trash. I should warn you in advance. And I fend off plenty of trolls and everything. But yeah, that's my social media that I'm most on. And then yeah, coming in September, I launch a middle grade series called Dactyl Hill Squad from Scholastic that is basically kids flying around on dinosaurs during the Civil War.
Oh, sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah,
sounds
it's
like
really
up
fun.
My son's jam. Like that's something I'll have to bring him to.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's a big, big expansive world, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. So Dactyl Hill Squad comes out in September.
Well, excellent. Excellent. Now, we hope to hear from you more in the future, and hopefully they'll bring you back for a lot of more books, man. We'd love to see your
stuff.
I hope so, too. Take care.
Take care of yourself. All right. Peace.
May the force be with you.
Hey, yes, sir.
Thank you for writing Star Tours. Bye-bye.